Ladies and gentlemen, I invite you to bow your head in prayer. Almighty God, we ask you to guide us in all of our discussions, to show goodness, honesty, understanding and wisdom in all that we undertake for the benefit of the city of Joondalup and our residents. May we respect each other's views at all times, and we ask all of this in your name. Amen. Thank you. Please be seated. Nala Kadic, Wajak Morat, Kain Kardak, Nijabuja. We acknowledge Noongar people as the original custodians of this land, and I declare this council meeting open at 6:30 p.m. The first item of business is declarations of interest. I have a number, so please bear with me. First of all, from Mr. Pearson, the Chief Executive Officer for item 13.1.1, confidential CEO concluded annual performance review. It is a financial interest as Mr. Pearson holds the position of Chief Executive Officer. A further declaration from the CEO as well, also, this time for item 13.1.2, confidential salary review CEO. It's a financial interest as Mr. Pearson holds the position of Chief Executive Officer. Declaration from myself for item 12.11, tender for the provision of landscape and irrigation maintenance services in Iluka. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as I am the owner and resident of a property in Iluka. Declaration from myself also for item 14.1, MRC waste to energy tender. It's an interest that may affect impartiality because I have been a member of the MRC up until tonight. I do some external work relating to environmental regulation for private commercial landfill operators, and I'm personally impacted by the MRC owner at my place of residence. Further declaration from Vivian Stampalia, the Governance Coordinator for item 14.1, Mindara Regional Council Waste to Energy Tender. It's an indirect financial interest as Ms. Stampalia's husband is an employee of Mindara Regional Council. Declaration from Director Parry for item 13.1.1, CEO concluded annual performance review. It's an interest that may affect impartiality due to the nature of Director Parry's employment relationship with the CEO. Further declaration from myself for item 12.7, list of payments made during the month of August 2024. An interest that may affect impartiality is I do some part-time work for Thompson Gear. I do not work on City of Joondalup matters. Declaration from Director Parry for item 13.1.2, confidential salary review for the CEO. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as due to the nature of Director Parry's employment relationship with the CEO. And two declarations from the Deputy Mayor one, first of all, for confidential item 14.1, Mindara Regional Council Waste to Energy Tender. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as he is a Deputy Member of Catalina Regional Council and mindful that the interests of both MRC and Catalina Regional Council are potentially affected by decisions relating to Tamala Park and also that he lives in Burns Beach, one of the suburbs that surrounds Tamala Park. His home is not located close to the landfill and he's not particularly adversely affected by odour issues from the landfill. Further declaration from Deputy Mayor for item 14.2, appointment of a representative to Mindara Regional Council as he's a Deputy Member of Catalina Regional Council, noting the Council resolution of the 5th of April 2005, the Council recommendation of the 20th of September 2005 as detailed in the agenda. Councillors, are there further declarations of interest? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a declaration of may affect impartiality for item 12.2. Just members of the campaign against the development and I'm known to myself.
Thank you, Councillor O'Neill. I have two other declarations here as well, one from Councillor Chester, also for item 12.2. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as Councillor Chester is a long-term member of CAGRA, which is campaigning against the Warwick Quarter developments, and a declaration from Councillor Pizzi for item 12.10, LIFAC installation at City of Joondalup venues. It's an interest that may affect impartiality as people of LIFAC are known to Councillor Pizzi. Councillor Pizzi has a LIFAC device that will be donated to Brian when voted upon. Further declarations of interest, Councillor Hutton.
I have some declarations of interest that may affect impartiality. On 14.1, I am a member of the Catalina Regional Council. Also on 14.1, I represent a community directly impacted by the facility. On 14.1 also, I have been personally lobbied by members of the MRC on the waste-to-energy tender. And then on item 14.2, also an interest affecting impartiality, I am a member of the Catalina Regional Council.
Thank you, Councillor Hutton. Further declarations of interest? If not, we proceed to deputations, which was dealt with at the briefing session. Next item of business, therefore, is public question time. There's a set of procedures relating to public question time, and I'll request that you follow my direction at all times. You have an opportunity to ask two questions. Your question should be directed to myself and asked in a polite and respectful manner. And please state your name and address for the public record before asking your question, as per our meeting procedures. As is our practice, we maintain a register outside for people who may wish to ask a question, so I'll commence there, and then, time permitting, we can open up for questions from the gallery. I'll call forward for the first question, Mr. Travis Miat.
These two questions relate to the investigation by the city regarding the noise wall along Twickenham Drive. First question. Can the city please provide the name of the main roads WR contact that they're liaising with as per the answer provided to me in my question in the last council meeting?
I need to, for our meeting procedures, get you to declare your name and address, if I can please, Mr. Yeah.
Travis Mee at 26 Drayton Greenway.
Thank you. Director Klassen or Director Lee?
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor, the key contact I'm currently in conversation with at Main Roads is a gentleman by the name of John Robertson. I do believe there are others involved in a meeting that we have arranged for the next week or two.
Thank you. Thank you. My second question is, given that Main Roads WA have not responded to questions I've asked that relate directly to the investigation the city is currently undertaking, can I forward these questions to the city to pass on to Main Roads WA in an attempt to get a response?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I'd be happy to receive those questions. I'd be happy to raise them as part of a meeting I referred to that's been arranged to take place in early November.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miat. Mr. Cornelius? My apologies if I got that wrong, sir.
Good evening. My name is Cornelius de Groot, 20 Millport Drive, Warwick. This is in relation to the Warwick Activity Centre / Development multi-storey buildings. I suppose the question I have, firstly, is that the concept of low-cost housing in such a density and involvement of high-rise, I would regard that as something as something which has been done before and it hasn't worked. And the question then is...
Apologies, I need to bring you to a question.
Would the council, when further considering this development, make a special effort to relate this particular development to what has been done elsewhere and failed?
Director Lee.
Thank you for you, Mr. Mayor. As part of the structure planning process that the city believes should take place for the Warwick Activity Centre, there is a fair bit of analysis that goes into that project, and essentially a structure plan is looking to coordinate an outcome for the activity centre and ensure that it integrates with its surrounding locality as well. So through that analysis, there would be some, background research into what has worked elsewhere and what hasn't worked elsewhere, but also key to the structure planning process would be a contextual analysis of what does already exist around the activity centre and also what's likely to exist going into the future. So there is an integrated outcome between what happens on the activity centre site and then also what happens surrounding it as well.
And
the second question.
The second question is more related to... it was my train of thought. I was expecting that this was coming in after the meeting. The second question is related to let it go. I can't get it together, sorry.
Not a problem. Thank you, Mr. Cornelius. Ms. Beth Hewitt.
Beth Hewitt from Edgewater. What happens if the, this is regarding Warwick, what happens if the developer decides not to provide any of the promised amenities for the apartments, such as the pools or shared areas? Is there a risk that these are only on the plans to make it easier to sell to the community and to the SDAU for approvals?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The development is approved and in its current form and the developer then chooses to change that, so remove some of the amenities as you suggested, there would be a condition as part of any approval that development is required to comply with the details of the development plans. If there was a decision to then deviate significantly from that by the developer, and I'd consider something like removing amenities, whether or not they're for the apartment occupants or the broader public, I would consider that something to be significant enough to require an amendment process to be undertaken, and so I'd expect the developer to have to submit a revised application that would then be subject to another assessment, and depending on the nature of the change as well, it may also require community consultation. Not in all instances, but it really depends on the nature of the change.
Second question.
Given that these activity centres are expected to serve the wider district, how much of the surrounding area will be adversely affected by this if the site is prejudiced? In other words, those unit blocks that aren't part of this overall development.
Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. It's probably a question that I can't provide an answer with any degree of certainty on. I think it does depend on the nature of the development and also, I guess, the type of adverse impact that you might be considering. For example, a property or a site within the activity centre that is immediately adjoining one of the sites may be more impacted on an overshadowing point of view than one further away. There may be broader impacts beyond the activity centre as well from, say, a traffic point of view. So, unfortunately, I can't give you a clear answer, but I would expect those that are closer to the sites and certainly immediately adjoining have the potential to be impacted more so than properties further away, but that's not to say that other properties, even in the locality, won't be impacted in some way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. I think, is it Mr. Sedaris?
Yeah, hi, Mitch Sedaris, 12 Page Drive, Mullum. In response to a couple of the questions were submitted in writing for tonight's meeting, one of the questions referred to the loss of the grassed area at Tom Simpson Park. Were the county response indicates that council was advised at the Capital Works meeting, I think, were the councillors advised of the specific size and area and the amount of loss of grassed area at Tom Simpson Park during those discussions?
Director Classen.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the elected members were advised of the concept and the change in the layout. There weren't any specific regarding the size discussed at that meeting, no.
Sorry, I missed that last bit of the answer.
Director?
As I've indicated, the exact size was not discussed at the meeting, no.
The plans were discussed in general, from my recollection, yes.
Sure.
Thank you. Do you have a second question?
One of the last question, I think, related to the amount of the aggregate, the washed aggregate used at Tom Simpson Park on the shared pathway as part of the upgrade. Does that washed aggregate comply with the relevant Australian standards for cycleways? And if so, which section of the standard?
Director Classen.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, as indicated in our response, it's at that location is not specifically a cycleway, it's a shared zone, and the discussions held with the Department of Transport regarding the appropriate treatment in that area around the Sea Sports Club was decided, and based on that, in relation to specific standards, I will have to research that and provide that response to. I'll take that part on notice. Thank you.
And that'll be taken on
notice. Thank you, Mr. Sideris.
Sorry, I'll just say.
That's what he just said. Thank you, Mr. Sideris. Are there any other questions? Please.
Good evening, Mayor and Councillors. Pedro Perez from Dracena Street in Greenwood. I was recently noticed that the city has opened a window for feedback on the digital plan. And where can we find the digital plan? Because I was looking for it and I couldn't find it.
Thank you. Director Parry?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will have to take that one on notice and we'll provide some information with regard to that one to you.
Before the deadline is finished for the feedback?
Director Parry?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I'm not aware of the closing date, so we will try and get
that information. Pretty sure it's the end of the month.
Mr. Perez, please.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll take that on notice. Mrs. Chester, I think, did you have your hand up? Oh, Ms. McCoray. McCoray.
Sonia McCall from 55 Charrington Road in Greenwood. My questions relate to the Warwick development. How can the community be confident that the suburb of Warwick can tolerate an extra 65% increase in dwellings with these developments?
Thank you. Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Mayor. As part of the proposal, the applicant did submit a range of reports that assessed potential impact on a number of issues, one of them being traffic. But as outlined in the officer's report and its recommendation, the city's of the view that this development is premature and there should be a structure planning process undertaken before considering a development of this nature. Similar to a response to an earlier question, the structure planning process allows us to undertake a much broader consideration of what is transpiring in the activity centre and its surroundings. And so I would imagine that consideration would also be able to be taken into account as to what the potential impact of development of the activity centre to its full potential rather than just certain sites would take into account in terms of how it would impact the surrounding suburb.
Thank you. Do you have a second question?
How is it possible that the plans, if I've read them correctly, show apartments with bedrooms that have no windows?
Director.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Part of the officer's recommendation identifies the need for a number of updates to the plans. Through our assessment, did identify a number of issues, such as those that have been identified, that would need to be addressed, in our view, before the WAPC considered or contemplated approving it. So I think to your question, there are various requirements under different pieces of legislation, planning and building, that would not allow a bedroom to be built with out a window. But it is those sorts of things that we've identified in our assessment and recommended that be addressed before any sort of approval is granted.
Thank you. Further question, please. Sir, and then this lady. Thank you. Actually, while you're coming forward, Council, I just propose a 10-minute extension to question time. Seconded Councillor O'Neill. By a show of hands, those in favour. Against, declare that carried. Thank you. Please proceed.
Good evening. My name is Richard Dobrovolsky, 16 Elmhurst Way, Greenwood. My question relates to the Warwick development assessment. Under the regulations, were the WAPC allowed to insist that the city and other stakeholders kept this DA, as in... I've forgotten what it stands for now. Confidential. That was the question.
Thank you. Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Mayor. It's a question that we received at the briefing session or similar to and did some research into that. Our research indicated that there doesn't appear to be a legislative requirement for the application to be confidential, but certainly in the correspondence that we received from the Department of Planning through that pre-lodgement phase, we are advised that the information they're providing us is confidential.
Thank you. Second question. Why does it seem as though none of the advice the city provided in the pre-lodgement consultation has been taken on board, and what is the purpose for that consultation if it's not adhered to?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not able to answer why any of the advice that the city provided was not taken on board. In relation to the reasons why the city may be invited to make comments as part of the pre-lodgement process, my understanding of that is so the city is able to raise issues early in the process, and so it provides more of an opportunity to a developer to undertake changes if they choose to. But as this application has demonstrated, there's not necessarily an obligation on their part, but at least it's an early indication for the developer or the proponent as to what the local government's thoughts are and what sort of issues that the local government might be dealing with when we are formally referred the application.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please.
Hello, Mayor Jacobs and councillors. My name's Karina Hudson from 42 Eddington Road in Warwick. I'd like to know, my question is obviously about the Warwick Quarter. How long have you known about the plan? When was it first presented to you? And why did you keep it in secret for so long from the residents? We only got like a month consultation. It was basically feedback. So why were you not able to advise, when you received the plans, advise residents of the proposal and make us aware of what was being considered before this entire thing became something serious?
Thank you. Director Lee?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. The city, from an officer level point of view, was made aware of the application being explored to be lodged with the State Development Assessment Unit late last year. We were asked to provide pre-lodgement comments, which we did in November 2023. The pre-lodgement process, as I've touched on in response to a question earlier, we're advised is a confidential process, and so that is a reason why we didn't advise elected members or the community at the time. We received correspondence from the Department of Planning in, I believe it was August 2024, formally referring the application to the city to provide comment. And at that same time, they advised us that they were intending to commence community consultation very shortly. So at that stage, I believe we notified elected members a day or two after receiving that advice, and then within a day or two after that, the public consultation process opened.
Thank you. Do you have a second question?
I do. The housing proposed, is that going to be significantly lower to provide for the so-called housing crisis? Are the apartments going to be subsidised somehow? Is it going to be for Department of Community residents? And also, why wasn't there a structure plan in place to try and prevent the STAU from bullying tactics to just bypass the City of Joondalup so that they can get what they want approved without the necessary structure plan being assessed?
Thank you, Director Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. To your question regarding the structure plan, there's a few reasons behind it, but also perhaps to answer First of all, having a structure plan would, in my view, be of a benefit and certainly should be a precursor to a development of this scale in this centre. But it also wouldn't necessarily prevent or stop an applicant or a developer from lodging this application. So even if there was a structure plan in place that contemplated a different style of development, it still wouldn't prevent a developer from coming forward with this proposal if that's what they really wanted to do. So in working through the reasons behind why a structure plan hadn't been prepared to date, firstly, a structure plan for a centre of this size and land ownership would typically be proponent-led, and so you would find one of the major land owners within the activity centre would lead that process, but it doesn't have to be. Under the state planning policy, the WAPC or the local government or the proponent is able to prepare one. But as I said, for something like Warwick, it would be more typical that a key landowner would develop it. And then taking a step back into some of the history, in 2013, our local commercial strategy identified the benefit that a structure plan would have for Warwick. But at that stage, local government had far greater control over requiring a structure plan before development. And in 2014, council established a position that required one to be prepared before any development occurred within Warwick of any scale. That level of control was diminished somewhat in 2015 when the current planning and development local planning scheme regulations came into effect, and that really made structure plans a state-level planning instrument rather than a local one. At that time, Warwick still did have a good amount of control. It was zoned under our previous planning scheme, and there was a clear land use permissibility and development standards that that applied. This changed in late 2018 when Warwick was rezoned centre, and that's what really catalysed the need for a structure plan. But recognising this and the limited guidance for development in the absence of a structure plan, council made a decision in 2019 to basically put in place a set of guiding principles and frameworks that would apply for any development in the absence of a structure plan. And so that really returned the level of control, or at least how council would deal with an application, back to how it was before the scheme changed. And so council adopted a position that any development would be assessed against the commercial zone of our scheme and also against the relevant local planning policy, as well being our commercial local planning policy. That's held us in quite good stead up until now, but I would say it still is serving us reasonably well in the assessment of this application. We've still used council's established position, the scheme provisions and our local planning policy to guide our assessment and recommendation to council. So whilst a precinct structure plan isn't in place for Warwick at the moment, we do have a framework to guide our assessment, and that's basically how we presented it to council this evening. And then just addressing the first part of your question around the nature of the housing, the applicant has noted that their decision to lodge an SDAU application is to respond to a current housing shortage, but they don't identify the nature of the housing, so they haven't explained whether it's intended to be affordable housing or what the housing model would be. So at this stage, it's not a matter necessarily that we can take into account as part of our assessment, but obviously would have to be a consideration for the developer as they go forward and as they establish their feasibility for the development.
So can I also ask one more thing?
No.
I just want to know what other proposals that you're aware of that
Please take your seat. Thank you. Are there any further questions? If not, I declare public question time closed and we proceed to public statement time. There's a set of procedures which relates to public statement time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You're able to make a statement for up to 2 minutes. Your statement should be directed to the chair and be polite and respectful. No question or discussion will occur at the end of your statement, And please come forward and state your name and address for the public record before making your statement. Similar to public question time, we maintain a register for people wishing to make a statement. I will work through that register in the first instance. Noting the number of people on the register, it appears unlikely that I'll be able to throw it open given the constraints, but if I can, I will. I call for our first statement, Mr. Andre Butters.
Andre Butters, 2 Warrior Court, Padbury. I'm reading this statement to the Chair on behalf of the member for the electorate of Hillarys, Caitlin Collins, MLA, 2/2 Banks Avenue, Hillarys, regarding item 12.10, the installation of LifeAct devices at the City of Joondalup venues. There is no greater tragedy than the loss of a child, and as elected leaders, one of the greatest responsibilities is to assure public spaces can be as safe as possible, particularly for children. Today I would like to acknowledge Mr. Brian Amondi in the public gallery and recognise the tireless advocacy he has made for children's safety here in the local community, but also across the state of Western Australia. January 15, 2024 was a shocking moment of shared grief for the northern coastal community as tragedy struck Iluka foreshore. But in the face of such sorrow, Mr. Amondi has channeled his pain into positive change for all of us. Zaza's loss has sparked a renewed focus on preventing similar tragedies, and Mr. Amondi has been instrumental in proposing sensible policy reforms aimed at safeguarding children. One of the key recommendations is the installation of the LifeVac airway clearance device in community venues across the city of Joondalup. These devices, when used in conjunction with first aid measures, when first aid measures have been exhausted, are invaluable tools that can prevent choking fatalities. In moments of emergency, being equipped with the latest life-saving technology can mean the difference between life and death. I would like to thank Mr. Amondi and Councillor Rebecca Pizzi for bringing this important issue to the Councillor's attention. I commend the City officers for their recommendation to purchase and install the devices across city spaces. I strongly urge the Council to vote in favour of item 12.10 and this life-saving initiative. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butters. Linda Crawford.
Good evening, Mayor, Councillors, Linda Crawford, Goron Road, Duncraig. I'd like to speak to the motion 16.2 relating to the Mis and Disinformation Bill. In my lifetime, this is one of the most chilling pieces of legislation that I have seen put forth. I recently sent a copy of my submission to my federal member and his office responded with, quote, "One of the most alarming elements of the bill is that it grants the Minister the power to personally order misinformation investigations and hearings. These provisions are extraordinary and out of place in a democratic society like ours. Under this bill, ordinary Australians could see their honestly held opinions labelled as misinformation simply for disagreeing with those in positions of authority," end quote, Office of Ian Goodenough. History has many examples that clearly illustrate why we need robust debate and not censorship. In the 1840s, Dr. Semmelweis hypothesised that by washing hands between working with cadavers and then delivering babies, it may reduce infection and death in childbirth. Despite his success, due to an elite few being resistant, Semmelweis lost his job and is thought to have had a breakdown, later dying in a mental institution. So it took another 50 years before Lister pioneered antiseptic surgery and hand washing moved to being something all doctors were told to do. If Semmelweis's opinion had not been deemed misinformation at the time, more robust debate may have ensued. This bill may create a dangerous situation where we can no longer have scientific or any other type of debate that goes against the narrative of the government. It will cover the economy, banking, health and more. On the first day of public hearing, Senator Cadell asked that, quote, "Given the exclusions from this bill of government and big media, is this an elitist censorship?" end quote. The response from the Institute of Public Affairs was, quote, "Yes, that's right, Senator. It's a two-tiered elitist system where professional news organisations and academia are exempt," end quote. I strongly urge that the Council agrees with Councillor Kingston's motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Crawford. Ms. Michelle Kwok.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Kwok, 15 Crowthorpe Ocean Reef. Mayor Councillors, Kaya, the misinformation and disinformation bill should not be passed in its current form. The bill exempts communications from federal, state and local governments, professional news entities and academia being classified as mis or disinformation. Content posted by ordinary Australians will be subject to censorship. This creates a dangerous double standard and is discriminatory in nature. The regulator, ACMA, who is imposing the obligation, will not be accountable to Australians who have no right of appeal or review if their communications were wrongly censored. Parliament should be making the law itself and not delegate this important matter to another authority. The bill purports that the government is the sole arbiter of truth. Political parties in opposition have different versions of the truth. Will a change of government mean a change of what is true? How are exemptions possible unless the government sees itself and the mainstream media as infallible? Given that they are capable of making mistakes and have apologised on occasion, how can it then impose this bill on the rest of society? The bill contravenes the UN Declaration of Human Rights and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights is an assault on the freedom of opinion and expression. The scope of what could be considered harmful is so broad that it could potentially capture any difference of opinion, undermining democratic principles. The principle of legality requires any law infringing on fundamental rights to be clear and unambiguous. This bill, vague language, does not meet this requirement, leading to potential arbitrary enforcement and stifling free speech. This bill should be rejected. Please tell the government so. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kwok. Mr. Brian Boga.
Sorry, that's my son. He's a little bit scared. Brian Boga, 49 Pacific Way, Belden. I'm here for gratitude. Mayor, thank you for giving me the opportunity. And all the council members, I know you're tired of me coming here a couple of times. I just want to say thank you. This is my son. I've been shielding him since his brother passed away. But today, I said we're skipping Bluey. And we need to be here. So he's here with me. And he's a physical representation of his younger brother. When we ask for quality of a community, like strength, wisdom, courage, or love, we are often given situations that requires us to develop them. Difficult problems and opportunity to help others are the path of becoming the person we aspire to be. It's a reminder that healing are answered unexpectedly, a way guiding us to grow through strength, struggle, pain, and grief. It's been 10 months last week since we lost my little son. I just want to say, if you can just consider to pass this motion to have life back everywhere, I think it's just going to be an awesome opportunity to lead WA and especially Joondalup. So I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity. And just show you my son. And we're here together. So thank you for the time to consider it. And hopefully, regardless of what happened, I just want to say thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boga. Thank you.
Mr. Cornelius.
Good evening, Mayor and Councillors. My name is Cornelius de Groot, 20 Milford Drive, Warwick. Just a brief
statement, again in relation to Warwick in general, and I think it's fair to say what we heard tonight with some of the answers to the questions. As residents, we are disappointed with the mechanisms of the democratic processes, how this development could get to this point, and is being forced through. And then I see in relation to a notice of motion number one from Councillor Kingston to hold a petition. And, you know, when you read through this, it's due considerations of the various aspects. In particular, I note the conflict of interest, privacy considerations, and other matters. But like it's been presented as a conflict of interest is interesting. This is the bread and butter for the planning of the city of Joondalup, and it's now being presented as, well, we can't do something like a petition because it presents a conflict of interest. And I would have thought that conflict of interest, for example, is something like a personal interest in a matter, but not the entire issue as such. So I just like to make a statement in the sense that when you read something like this and the whole process has come through, I think we have a breakdown in the democratic processes. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Gay Sterling.
Good evening, councillors. A statement from me. I'd have to say I'm really concerned with the responses that the council is providing for the Warwick Quarter proposal. Director Lee, particularly your responses, you do state that the council was asked to provide comment on the proposal, but you also talk about in 2019 that there was framework in place. I've got to say that, you know, I'm really concerned with those responses, and ultimately I'd like to know the position, and it probably should have been a question time, is that, you know, ultimately does the council support this
Sterling,
proposal?
My apologies, obviously question time is over. But
yes,
so
I know. So my
Please don't speak over me. The rules for statement time are quite clear, and I can't recall seeing you attend a council meeting, so I'm trying to give some leniency, but reflecting on actions of officers is very clearly against the rules of statement time and also the meeting procedures. This isn't a forum for that, and the rules on the meeting are quite clear. So you are welcome to make your statement, but not to reflect on the actions of officers or councillors. Thank you.
I do believe I think I filled in the wrong form, and I should have been up here for question time, so I suppose I will just finalise my public statement by asking the council to support the motion from Councillor Kingston on the petition for Warwick Quarter. Thank you.
Thank you. Sonia McCaw.
Sonia McCaw, 55 Sherrington Road, Greenwood. Good evening, Mayor, Councillors. Thank you for the opportunity to make a statement. The huge Warwick apartment proposal by any measure is opportunistic and excessive, and we are here to ask today that the City of Joondalup councillors do all they can to advocate for our community and our deeply felt concerns regarding this proposed development. It is a developer exploiting the significant development pathway to try to determine the structure of our Warwick Activity Centre without any consideration to the other site owners, the infrastructure needed, or especially the amenity of surrounding residents. The proposal of this scale and height is what we would expect to see in the Joondalup City Centre, a strategic centre, not in the suburban Warwick Secondary Centre. The community looks to its elected council to represent and to resist disorderly planning they are being subjected to.
The community is confounded by the state government's efforts to remove planning approval power from local government, and then even more so by the local member who is still continuing to use the issue as a political football and put blame on the city of Joondalup for allowing this all to happen. All of you here today have the opportunity to support the city's recommendations to not support the proposal. You can and also should support Councillor Kingston's motion to initiate a petition to the state legislative assembly. And I have heard arguments that our actions in asking for this petition are premature, but we know the WAPC's decision is premature, but we cannot afford to delay. The secrecy around the development and its use of the SDUA confidentiality powers has us all but convinced of the outcome, and we can't wait for the SDUA to make an official assessment public before beginning to collect signatures. We risk losing our voice entirely and the battle is lost. The current housing crisis is being used as an emotive tool to sway votes in the balance of the developer.
Thank you, Ms. McCall.
Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes public statement time. We now proceed to the next item of business, which is apologies and leaves of absence. We have no leaves of absence or apologies for this evening. However, there are some requests for a leave of absence up on the screens before you, one for Councillor Chester and also one for Councillor Jones. Are there any other requests for a leave of absence, elected members? Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are two separate ones. The first one is for the 28th of October. And the next one is from the 6th of November to the 25th of November, inclusive.
So it was 6th of November to...
25th.
To 25th. Thank you. Councillor Jones.
Can I amend the 7th of November to the 11th of November, please?
Certainly. Thank you. Further requests? If not, do I have a mover and a seconder for the motion before us? Moved Deputy Mayor, seconded Councillor May. No discussion on that motion. I will put the motion and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed and the item is carried unanimously. Our next item of business is confirmation of minutes. Do I have a mover that the minutes of the council meeting held on the 17th of September be confirmed as a true and correct record? Moved to Councillor Jones. Do I have a seconder? Seconded Councillor Vinciullo. Thank you. Are there any questions or discussion on the minutes? If not, I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes on the screens before you. Thank you. Declare the voting closed and the item's carried. Number 9, announcements by the presiding member without discussion. I'm proud to announce that the city claimed two major honours at the 2024 International Association of Horticultural Producers World Green City Awards, having been announced as the winner of the Living Green for Water category ahead of cities from around the world, including the capital of Saudi Arabia. The city was also announced as the inaugural AIPH Youth Award winner, for supporting, engaging, collaborating with, and providing green urban environments, creating opportunities for youth in social, recreational, and sporting activities. Entries were open to government authorities worldwide, with category finalists representing countries including China, the United Kingdom, Germany, Portugal, Romania, the United States, Mexico, Brazil, South Africa, and Kenya. The award recognises Joondalup's commitment to building a livable and resilient city in the context of a changing climate. For a decade, Joondalup's climate change strategy has guided our approach to mitigating the effects of climate change and increasing resilience. We've made it a priority to increase our tree canopy, use water resources effectively, and provide opportunities for our community to be more water-wise. Our initiatives are helping to create cooler, more inviting green urban spaces within our city, and we're delighted that our hard work has been recognised at the AIPH Awards. For more information regarding this achievement for the city, including a video outlining the city's entry for the award, please do visit the city's website. Speaking of the city's website, we've recently launched a revamped website, which has been redesigned and built to create a more user-friendly, accessible and modern online presence. The new look and feel of the website features enhanced navigation, predictive search features and improved functionality, as well as a refreshed design that reflects our community's needs and expectations. Residents can access online waste services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in our new My Joondalup customer portal. The new website embodies adaptability and allows the city to remain agile in a rapidly evolving digital landscape, as well as better utilising technology to deliver our services and engage with our community. You can visit the Joondalup website on any device, anytime and anywhere. Finally, the City of Joondalup's iconic Music in the Park concert series returns in November with 2 outdoor concerts on consecutive Saturday nights. Part of the City's extensive summer event program, Music in the Park provides residents with high-quality, free, family fun in the places where they live and work, live and play. On Saturday the 2nd of November, Sienna Ribello, Combi A Train and Sergeant Holker will take centre stage at Warrandyte Park in Craigie. On Saturday the 9th of November, the series heads north to Brampton Park in Burns Beach, featuring Whiskey Jack, Helen Townsend and the Wayward Hearts, and also Grace Barb Afro Creole. Both shows are Auslan interpreted and run from 5pm to 8:30 with food trucks and lawn games to keep the family entertained. And for full details, please visit the city's website. Come now to item 10, identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public. There are 3, which is item 13.1.1, confidential CEO concluded annual performance review, 13.1.2, confidential salary review for the CEO, and 14.1, confidential Mindari Regional Council waste to energy tender. There is also a possibility that item 12.6 or 12.11 may need to go behind closed doors if there's any discussion on the confidential attachments of those items, and I will just seek guidance from the council on that as we work through the agenda. Item 11 is petitions. The city is in receipt of 3 petitions as included on tonight's agenda. First being a petition in relation to a request that the city use a pool coping finish to the skate pole in the new skate park at Percydale Reserve in Duncraig. Second is a petition in relation to a request to upgrade the local Triton Place Mullaloo playground. And thirdly, a petition in relation to a request for a footpath on Superior Rise in Edgewater. We have before us a notice of motion to refer all of those to the CEO for action. Do I have a mover for that motion? Moved Councillor Kingston, seconded Councillor O'Neill. Any discussion on the motion? Councillor Chester?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was going to take this offline, but could the director please tell me what pool coping finishes and why is it preferred to other coatings?
Director Klassen?
Mr. Mayor. Pool coping refers to the edge of the top pool protruding over the edge, apparently, and I'm not a specialist skater, and I'm not trying to be one. I don't understand how it impacts, but apparently it's better for the more experienced skaters in terms of how they use the facility. We have done some preliminary assessments and additional costs, and look around $6,000. So we will consider that as when council refer that back to the CEO.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Chesser. If nothing further, I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed, and the item is carried unanimously. Thank you. Next item is item 12, reports. I will go around and ask councillors or give elected members the opportunity to withdraw, as is our practice. I'll start with Councillor Raftus, if I can, and work that way around the room. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. 12.6 and 12.7, please.
Thank you. I noted, if I can just ask Councillor Raftus, you flagged an amendment, I think, for 12.6. Would that require discussion
do you envisage of the confidential attachments? Or is that your intent? So at this stage, I prefer to leave it on the public agenda if I can, but Council, just note that if you wish to discuss that, we'll need to move it to the confidential part of the meeting. Councillor Fishwick.
None, thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill.
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor. 12.2 and 12.7.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus has withdrawn 12.7, but you'll have an opportunity on that item. Thank you. Councillor Chester?
None this evening, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Vinciullo?
None for me as well, thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Hamilton Pryor?
None, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzi?
12.10, please. And I'm assuming Councillor Kingston will do 16.2, but if he doesn't, I will.
That will be withdrawn. Those are all, yep. They'll be withdrawn as notices of motion. Councillor May?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Jones?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. If I could have 16.1, 16.2, those are the two notices of motion. Could I also have the Chair of the CEO Performance Review Committee withdraw 13.1.1 and 13.1.2? And then also for item 14.2, which is the appointment of the representative for the MRC, I'll be nominating against Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you. I will be withdrawing 13.1.1 and 13.1.2 in any event. Similarly, I'll be withdrawing 12.13 because all three of those require an absolute majority, and I will also be withdrawing item 12.4 because there's an option choice required, and I'll withdraw 14.2 and just run that process because, again, that has an option choice in terms of representatives. So noted, those all will be withdrawn. Councillor Hutton?
None to add. I assume 14.1 will be withdrawn automatically as a confidential item.
Yes, yeah, yeah. We'll consider that.
Thank you.
I should have said I'll be withdrawing 12.13 as well because that also requires an absolute majority. I think I did. Deputy Mayor.
None for me, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We'll go then to item 12.2. SDAU development application for 7 mixed-use buildings in the Warwick Activity Centre in Warwick. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the alternate.
Thank you. So moved. Councillor Chester.
I would like to foreshadow the original recommendations if that doesn't get up. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Firstly, I'd just like to thank the officers for all their hard work on the extensive recommendations. I agree with all of this. It's just a slight change with the alternate. I can just bring that up. Sorry. That it just inserts point four, requests the Chief Executive Officer to write to the Honourable Jessica Stoftievsky, MLA, Member for Kingsley, seeking support for part two above. I don't have much to add to this except I encourage all other councillors to get on board with that. It is a small thing that makes a big difference, I think.
Thank you, Councillor O'Neill. In taking your nod, I assume you were consenting to be seconder, Councillor Chester?
I do intend to second that.
Correct. As seconder, do you wish to address the motion?
I do wish to address it. I do have a few comments to make about the item. Firstly, let me recap comments that I made at the briefing session so that the gallery here this evening can understand the city's and the council's position on the proposed development. On October the 26th last year, the State Government Assessment Unit, SDAU, provided a development pre-lodgement package to the city and requested the city staff to provide advice to the applicant. The city replied with the following comment, and I quote, "The city's primary position is that the development of the site should not proceed in the absence of a precinct structure plan over the entire Warwick Activity Centre." The advice went even further and stated, I'm quoting again, the position is supported by previous council resolutions on the matter, with examples given, specific examples given, from council meetings, and the provision that the city local planning scheme be number 3 be adhered to. As I said before, this letter was sent in November last year, and it is on record that the city received no response whatsoever from any planning agency or from the developer. As all these entities have clearly ignored the city's advice, so for any subsequent agency or individual to now suggest that the city and council did not make it abundantly clear all along that it was absolutely necessary for a precinct structure plan to be put in place before any approval to be given, it could possibly, it could be reasonably, I should say, be described, the misleading comments I'm referring to, could be described as very unprofessional activity on their part, the questionable behaviour at the worst. In item 12.2 in tonight's agenda, the City and the Council once again make it quite clear that it would not be orderly or proper planning without a precinct structure plan put in place. And you will notice the recommendations suggest that the city is certainly not happy with the possible outcome. I would commend all the recommendations in this item to the council and hope that you will support the city's position. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chester. I heard a phone going off and I didn't want to interrupt while you were speaking. Something we'll take quite seriously. If anybody does have their phone on them, please turn it to silent. Thank you. Councillors, further comments? Councillor Fizzy?
Yeah, just a comment that I'll be supporting the city's recommendations as well as the amendments to include a letter to our local MLA. My hope is that the West Australian Planning Commission listen to ours and the community's concerns over this ill-proposed development in Warwick. Thanks.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a question, if I could, please. There's been talk about structure plans and obviously conversation and commentary around the need to have one. Previous precedents, I think you could say, the Sorrento or a development had a structure plan. Just like some commentary from the city officer, also director, Director Lee, about how that compares.
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Precinct structure plans are an important planning instrument. They help coordinate and guide development over a precinct or an activity centre. In response to one of the questions I addressed earlier this evening, whilst certainly having a structure plan in place is, in my view, of benefit and in this instance should precede a development of this sort of scale, it still doesn't stop a proponent or a developer from choosing to lodge an application of their choosing. So whilst there may be a structure plan that guides a certain development outcome to be achieved, it still doesn't compel an applicant to lodge in that way. It also, again, whilst it provides a guiding framework for assessment and decision-making for the relevant decision-maker, in this instance the WAPC, it still also doesn't bind that decision-maker to follow that structure plan to the absolute. So there is flexibility within the decision-making framework when it comes to planning applications and precinct structure plans that would allow a decision-maker to approve a development that is different to what the structure plan is seeking to achieve. And in relation to Sorrento and the Aura development, that's exactly what happened. There was an activity centre plan in place that guided a particular development outcome. An alternative design was lodged by the developer. And that alternative design, although it didn't align strictly with the structure plan, it was still approved by the West Australian Planning Commission.
Councillor Hamilton Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a supplementary to that. So based on that, even with a structure plan in place, there is potential for due regard not to be given to said structure plan requirements.
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. Structure plans are described in planning terms as a due regard document, which means when it comes to decision making, they should be observed and followed unless there is a, in planning terms, it's described as a cogent reason not to, so a very good reason not to follow the structure plan. That means there is still flexibility in the decision-making processing framework that does allow a decision-maker to set aside the structure plan details to some degree and make a decision on a design that doesn't align with the structure plan if they believe there's a good reason to do so.
Thank you. Councillor Ventura, did you seek the call?
I just wanted to go a step further and just commend the city officers on the extensive recommendations this evening, and I too will be supporting the officers' recommendations.
Thank you for the comments. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. So we're discussing alternate number four here, and I can support that, certainly. I do want to comment, as I did at the briefing session a couple of weeks ago, and for the benefit of people in the audience who were not there, I will try and condense what I said. So during the briefing session, I asked a number of questions that were answered by the Director of Planning and Community Development. These questions related to statements made by the Member for Kingsley and the Minister for Planning in WA State Parliament on the 11th of September 2024. The answers to these questions do not support some of the statements made on the 11th of September. For example, it is not correct that a local structure plan needs to be developed by the relevant local authority. It is not correct that a local structure plan should be developed by the relevant local authority. It is not the responsibility of City of Joondalup to prepare a structure plan for this proposed development. It is not correct that the City of Joondalup has in 2024 agreed to prepare a structure plan, and this fact illustrates why the City of Joondalup has not progressed with preparation of a structure plan. I've been on this council for 3 years, and I would hope that everyone is now fully aware that during my term of office, this matter has not been raised with council prior to the October 2024 briefing session and the ordinary council meeting. I fully support the recommendation before us and commend the department, the officers for their recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments, Councillor May?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple from me. Been contacted by many residents regarding this, as well as been in discussions with Mr. Edwards, who's in the gallery, who's also working very hard to support the community on this issue. First of all, Deputy Mayor Hill did make a good point in terms of there was a statement made in Parliament which sought to imply that the City of Joondalup has the power to stop redevelopment by simply having a structure plan, which is not the case. Structure plans can and are ignored in terms of they don't determine a decision by the WAPC. While disinformation and misinformation is a topic for later tonight, unfortunately, members of Parliament are exempt from such practices due to parliamentary privilege, but I would like to put on the record as well that a structure plan is a very costly and time-consuming exercise and would not, likely not, in my view, change the outcome of the WAPC's pending decision on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I believe this application in its current form fails to meet the standards of orderly and proper planning, and the West Australian Planning Commission should reject it for several key reasons. Firstly, the Council has consistently emphasised the importance of a precinct structure plan before considering significant developments such as the Warwick Activity Centre, and such a plan will allow us to comprehensively consider the urban structure, the public realm, zoning, movement networks and the built form for the entire centre. The absence of a precinct structure plan in this case is very, very concerning. Without it, the proposed development has been designed in isolation, focusing on specific lots in question rather than taking a holistic approach to the overall development of the centre. This fragmented approach risks prejudicing the future development opportunities in the area, particularly those surrounding the northern portion of the centre. Development as proposed appears to be driven by current land tenure and cadastral boundaries rather than a well-thought-out vision for the broader centre, and this could lead to disjointed outcomes with adverse impacts on neighbouring sites and the overall functionality of the Warwick Activity Centre. And proper planning requires a coordinated effort to balance residential and commercial uses, ensure effective transport connections, and create a cohesive urban environment. A precinct structure plan will allow a meaningful community input and more integrated, sustainable and inclusive development strategy aligned with the principles of State Planning Policy 7.2. And also the sheer scale of this proposal, buildings ranging up to 25 storeys, raises concerns about the built form's impact on the surrounding community. Without careful integration into the existing urban fabric, such a development could significantly alter the character of the area and place undue pressure on local infrastructure. And I believe it's essential that we carefully manage the interface between the centre and the surrounding residential areas to avoid negative consequences for traffic, parking and community amenity. And also like to want to stress the importance of the community consultation. If the WAPC chooses to consider any revised plans or additional information, it's vital that further community consultation be undertaken. And engaging the public in a meaningful way ensures that the voices of local residents are heard, and it strengthens the transparency and legitimises the planning process. For these reasons, I strongly urge the WAPC to reject the current development application and instead require the preparation of a precinct structure plan for the Warwick Activity Centre before considering any significant developments. Having said all that, I totally support the officer's recommendation and also with the addition of Clause 4. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Further comments? Are you seeking a point of order? Or?
I only ask questions, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Hamilton Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to concur the commentary around the table from my colleagues. It's my personal opinion that this does not meet...
I need a question, not a comment.
No, I asked a question. I didn't give a comment previously.
Ah, my apologies. You are correct. Thank you, Councillor Hamilton Pryor. Sorry, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First, I concur all the commentary similar to my colleagues. This is not fit and right or proper planning. The residents have spoken very clearly tonight, and I thank them for the respectful way and the conducting themselves. I think we all around this table really do appreciate it. I think it's up to now the WAPC and the state government to listen to the community and listen to what they are saying, because they have a very important message that this is overkill, it is too much, and it's not right and proper planning. And that's what we should expect, right and proper planning. I'm supporting the city officer's recommendation. I thank them for their hard work, and I will support the addition of number four, recommendation four, from Councillor O'Neill. I think that's an important point to add. Without talking about the points I previously talked about, I strongly support this, and I strongly support the residents in their advocacy on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hamilton Pryor. Further comments? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I just have some short ones. I'll start by saying I appreciate the depth in which the Director for Planning and, of course, the manager and the employees under him have gone into this to try and put together a comprehensive response to what is a fairly large development application, not just in scale, but also in length of the documents. So, and to put it together in such a short time, I think, is something quite admirable to go into such depth. But as far as the process with the SDAU, which was created by the state government during the COVID years, I personally don't feel that this process that they've set up is a good process. To have something of a significant nature, which is often of a large financial value or a large impact on the community, to then have such a long pre-lodgement period, which in this case, this has been going through pre-lodgements without any community involvement and without the involvement of the elected members here for well over a year, and to have such a long process where there's been discussions behind the scenes to try and work through different planning aspects of this without trying to at least gauge what the community thinks, is I think this is a flawed process that the Parliament has started from the outset. And especially when we compound that with the problem we have here of the lack of holistic planning for the site without a structure plan, without taking into account the overall views of the residents and how this development or any development on the site will interact with the surrounding community. And I think it is quite rightly to call this development a shock to have an additional 1,000 units in a 1,000 dwellings in a suburb of 1,600 dwellings is a 65% change. To me, that will, if this is approved, significantly change the character of the area to make Warwick in some ways quite unrecognizable. It will change the movements on the roads, it will change the landscape, it will change people's view of the scenery, and that then all impacts what future development and the character of the suburb will look like. But it's not just the residents surrounding, it's the building itself. It does appear, when I look at the plans, that this is going to be a dark place to live, is that looking at the internals and from what I see with the lighting in some of the diagrams, the availability of sunlight into the habitable rooms, I do have some concerns about is it appropriate to have these as habitable dwellings for people to live in and then have limited public open space around it. To me, that's a concern. I also don't think it's a positive thing to have people living without gardens. I think it's an important cultural and a social aspect, and I think everyone should have access to nature, even if it's just something small, and an enclosed piece of nature in the form of a garden and have it readily accessible. But I think the important thing to remember about this is that our decision here is not conclusive. It's not our choice about what happens. That choice is going to be made by the SDAU and the Planning Commission, and nothing we do here can compel them. We can make strong advocacy. We can say and put forward the officer's recommendations here, which is a good recommendation. And, of course, many of the residents have put forward their opinions as well. But at the end of the day, it's going to be the Planning Commission's choice. And the Planning Commission sometimes, there were some developments in the western suburbs recently with the SDAU, and I think there was over 300 people that wrote in, and even though there was all that opposition, the application was still approved. So depending on what the Planning Commission will make up its own mind. But once again, and I said this at the public meeting, the important thing to remember is that although the Planning Commission might have the power to approve this, is that power does originate with the Parliament, and the Parliament has reserved the power for the Premier and the Cabinet to overturn or cancel planning approvals if they're given. So I think we should look to in decisions like this where it might have a significant change on the suburb if it is approved. I think we should look to our parliamentarians to guarantee a positive outcome for the community. To put it bluntly, this is life-changing for a lot of people, especially the people who live around this, is that their property values might decrease by 10-20%, that or more. It can be very significant depending where somebody's property or their lifestyle relates to what this development is. So I think we need to be strong on this development. We need to have a unified opinion and a unified position against this. And then later in the meeting, I've also got a notice of motion saying that we should take up a petition in Parliament and ask the community to support that initiative. So I'll end there.
Thank you. Councillor Hutton.
Thank you, Mayor. At the briefing session, there was three questions which I asked of the administration. The first question was, does the city of Joondalup on its own have the power to stop this development? The answer, in short, was no. The next question was, does the state government, through any of its departments, have the power to stop this development? In short, the answer is yes. The final question was, is there anywhere in the city of Joondalup that would support a development of this size? And the answer is yes, the Joondalup CBD. Now, the reason I bring you to those points is because tonight, by supporting this motion, we have the opportunity to demonstrate to the local community that we are on their side. Although much of this process has been taken out of our hands by the state government through constant changes to legislative processes, we are going to do everything we can to fight for you, the local community. Now, as a representative of Joondalup's North Ward, which includes the Joondalup CBD, I want to be perfectly clear. The city of Joondalup is not anti-development. We are pro-development, but it has to be done properly. In fact, the Joondalup CBD has enough capacity to cater for the entire state's population growth over the next few years. And to be completely frank and honest, local residents in Joondalup CBD are crying out for more of this type of development to revitalise and activate the Joondalup CBD. So with saying that, I put forward the final point, which is we want to have your back, we want to support you, we should do everything we can to advocate for local residents. Unfortunately, the power is not within our hands, but we have other options that I hope we put forward as a council, which is to support the activation of the Dunlop CBD as a much better place to have developments of this size and say no to this Warwick Quarter development. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? If no further comments, before I hand to Councillor O'Neill to close, I'll just make a couple myself, particularly following on the heels of Councillor Hutton's comments right from the outset. I'm conscious of how narrative around planning decisions can go. This is an issue that's got significant community interest, and there'll probably be media interest going forward as well. I want to state very clearly that I encourage development of this scale in the city of Joondalup. We need it, and we need this type of investment. However, this is not a case of not in my backyard. In fact, the city is saying that we want it in the centre of our backyard, not in the periphery, not in the suburban, Warwick's at the southern end of the city of Joondalup. Joondalup is very pro-development. Joondalup wants this kind of development, and we want it in our city centre. So if there's any criticism of the council in supporting this motion, which from the debate so far seems that we will, and I'm supporting it also, it's not because we're opposed to development of this scale. It's because we are trying here to apply principles of orderly and proper planning. That's the purpose of planning, to say where one thing should go and where it should not go. These are the scale of developments that we envisage in Joondalup. These are the scale of developments that we want in Joondalup, and we want them right here in the centre, right next to where we're holding this meeting right now, not on the periphery. So I support the motion. Good work from all of the elected members, particularly the ward councillors. I know it's been a very difficult week for both of you, and I know that the work that you've been doing to represent your electors in your ward. Thank you for it, and very happy to support the motion.
Too late for a question, Mr. Mitt.
I haven't given Councillor O'Neill the call yet. Councillor Chester.
Yes, I was asked a question from the gallery earlier on.
Councillor Chester, with that preface, I can't give you the question.
I'm coming to the question. The question that was asked was, when is the WAPC likely to adjudicate on this matter? Does the director have any idea of that likely date?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. No, I'm not sure of the time frame at this stage. This particular application was lodged under the former SDAU pathway, which doesn't actually have a time frame attached to it. So WAPC doesn't have a statutory obligation on when they need to make a decision, and we haven't received any indication on when that would be either.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Firstly, thank you to all the fellow councillors for all their well-made points this evening. I'll just keep it really simple and just say I live in this area. I know Warwick well. I travel up and down these streets all the time. When this first came to light, a lot of people contacted me, and I have received hundreds of emails, phone calls and messages. Your voices have been heard. I've responded to as many people as I could. And those that I haven't, I apologise. The simple fact of the matter is that this is not well thought out. This is not improper planning. And as stated earlier this evening, the SDAU was used to exploit the system to put forward this proposed development. Hopefully the WAPC and SDAU starts listening to us instead of, you know, looking at the pockets of a developer. So with that, I won't say anything more, and I'll leave it to the councillors.
Thank you, Councillor O'Neill. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed, and the motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Next item of business is item 12.4, local government elections, review of Wailga advocacy positions. Council, I distributed an alternate, a recommendation, it's an option choice required to elected members, I think week before last, and I move that one. Do I have a seconder for the motion as put? Thank you, Councillor, Deputy Mayor. Just speaking to the options that I put forward, I'm following the officer's recommendations in this motion for terms of office, for voting methods, for voting accessibility, and for the method of election of mayor. For internal elections, there wasn't currently a city position. My recommendation is that we do those by first past the post. I think trying to do preference flows internally is tricky and adds significant time and burden. The main change that I have here, just to draw your attention, is number one, participation. As I said in my email to elected members, I'm very strongly of the view that local government would be improved if it did have what is known as compulsory voting. Compulsory voting is not compulsory voting, it's compulsory participation, and I'll return to that in a second. But it should be noted that in the vast majority of Australia, voting is compulsory at all three tiers of government. It's already compulsory for all of us at federal elections, it's already compulsory for all of us at state elections, and for approximately 80% of Australians, it's compulsory, as it currently stands, for local government elections. To me, more broadly, it's one of the best features of Australian democracy. We see democracy play out in a range of jurisdictions right around the world at the moment, and in jurisdictions where it's not compulsory, my observation is you see as much effort going into getting out the vote as you do into capturing people's vote. That inevitably pulls democracies to the areas where people are most active. I mean, broadly, they talk left and right. It inevitably pulls democracies away from the centre, the great middle of the electorate, because it goes to those people you think are voting rather than trying to seek to capture the community as a whole. I think the greatest strength of Australian democracy has been that Australia is governed as a whole. You have to capture the entire electorate, and local government in Western Australia has been an anomaly of that. For future councils as well, it gives a clear indication for the winner of a role of mayor or councillor. You know you've had the majority of support of your ward or indeed the municipality as a whole. The other thing I want to address, because there's a civil liberty side to this as well, is you're taking away people's right to refuse or conscientiously refuse to vote. That's not actually the case. Even though it's called compulsory voting, it is not compulsory to vote in Australia. It is compulsory to turn up on election day and have your name ticked off the roll. What you do with that ballot paper is up to you. I know many of you elected members have scrutinised, and you've seen that many people do not fill them in correctly. Many people draw things on them. Many people write things on them. That's their right. I don't seek to take that away. There are very few responsibilities that come with citizenship. At a state and federal level, that responsibility is to have your name ticked off the electoral roll once every 3 years and once every 4 years for state. In local government, it's even easier because it's a postal ballot. The only requirement would be, if this came in, would be that you would return the ballot that's already being posted to you. There's no great cost involved because those ballots are already being printed and they're already being mailed out to every elector. If electors choose conscientiously not to vote, that is their right. But citizenship doesn't carry too many responsibilities. I think the responsibility to return a ballot in the mail once every 2 years is not an onerous impost on citizenship, and I encourage you to support my alternate recommendation. Thank you. Deputy Mayor, seconder.
Reserve my right, thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? If not, Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a quick question in relation to voting was made to be compulsory, would there be fines applicable as in other elections if you chose not to vote? And what would they be?
Typically that is how it's enforced, and they range from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. That would be a decision for the Electoral Commission. Councillor Busy?
I do have concerns over compulsory voting. I think sometimes it can encourage thoughtless voting where people aren't really invested in what they're voting in. Like you say, they just do a dummy vote or they just tick a box when they don't really understand the process that they're going to. And I think people have a right to say if they want to be a part of that process or not. they might disagree with the whole process as it stands. So I'm not sure I can agree with that. Can we vote for these separately?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yeah, I would suggest if someone wanted to, if I can just say, if you wanted it to continue as voluntary voting, because I think we should have a position, option one should be foreshadowed for item one. Is that what you seek to do?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor May.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I support all the alternates, including the compulsory voting one, although my views on compulsory voting are a bit more on the fence. I think it should be supported for consistency purposes, given all 3 tiers of government, I think, should have the same practice. A lot of people actually do assume it's compulsory and still vote in local government elections because they think they'll get still a $20 fine. So I think it's reasonable that there be consistency. And it may force people to consider local government issues a bit more closely, particularly a lot of people we don't normally hear from, and but they still care about the community. They just don't really know the process of local government. And also to understand the different responsibilities of different levels of government, which is very poorly understood from my experience as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, just a few comments. I guess I will be foreshadowing. I'm just making sure I've got the right options written down here. I agree with the comments to do with compulsory voting. Obviously, I'm not in favour of compelling people to do anything, but I do think democracy is one of these privileges we've got here. And when I reflect to the situation in the UK versus Australia, I much prefer the electoral system here, where we're including active engagement of as many people as possible. And I do echo the comments of Councillor May. I found myself during my first council election getting a lot of people panicking because they hadn't submitted the ballot paper and they were getting prepared for the fine and asking me how they could appeal it. So that is a very common instance. So I think just providing clarity is a good thing. Having said that, I think personally a way to balance the compulsory voting is to, for option two, term of office, support option two, which is the sector supports 4-year terms on an all-in, all-out basis. Now, as is commented in the officer's comment, this is in line with what other states do. I do personally agree with the approach of having every 4 years you have a state election and then 2 years separate you have a local government election. It does provide quite clear clarity and distinction around what elections are happening and what the issues are of the day. And personally, I think as a nation, we are sometimes over-governed too many elections, people often complaining about having to go to by-elections and those types of things. So personally, I think it's a good compromise to, yes, have compulsory elections, but we should be having them less regularly, and we should also be providing a clear break between state and federal elections. So, yeah, I will foreshadow voting against term of office and supporting option two. Moving down to the voting methods, yes, I agree with option two, the sector keeping the optional preferential voting. On option four, however, when we've got here internal elections supporting first-past-the-post, and I will also be foreshadowing option two, which is supporting optional preferential voting. And my experience so far, being involved in only one round of these internal elections, is that first-past-the-post is unfortunately open to too much gamesmanship between councillors in order to game the system to get an outcome which is sometimes not in the best interest of the majority of councillors. I therefore think optional preferential would actually encourage more councillors to put their hand up for more positions and would therefore result hopefully in the best outcome. So I will foreshadow option two. Option five, I do agree we shouldn't just go for postal voting. In-person voting should also be an option. I actually think it has to be made easier to vote in person. At the moment, you have to rock up with your package or fill out paperwork. I feel like, you know, it should be very easy to do either or, but happy to support that recommendation. And yeah, the method of election, Mayor, I'm happy to stick as the current one. So yes, just foreshadowing that on the term of office, I will be voting against the current recommendation in favour of 4-year terms. And on internal elections, I will be supporting optional preferential as opposed to first past the post.
Thank you. Councillor Chesser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Reading around the subject, the commentary that struck me as being quite relevant is compulsory voting and preferential voting particularly would lead to vote exchanges. Our system, which is unlike the eastern states, would become politicised. I wonder if the Director of Governance might have a particular comment to make on that perceived risk.
Director Perry.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'm not going to offer a personal comment in relation to that. Stamp page 1567 does, 1565 in the attachments does provide an outline of the officer comment in relation to compulsory voting and the arguments for and against, and I think that information was utilised by the council to determine its particular position, taking into account the concerns that you've expressed also.
Yes, that's the section that I read, and I'm assuming that it's Walgett's point of view. Is that not correct, Director?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I cannot remember whether that was a proposition put forward by Walgett or was our own research. A number of the comments that have been provided in here or in those particular submission papers were departmental advice, and where we could match it with Walga advice and provide our own to provide a balanced argument, I think we tried to do that as best that we could.
Thank you. Councillor Rafters.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Too many issues with the recommendations or the often put forward, other than in terms of the internal elections. Very much support the option from Councillor Hutton. I think internal wise is to go with option two. The issue you raised around the impact due to the number of internal elections, I don't believe we have too many, so I don't think it'll be an impact of time. I think having the optional preferential should be utilised in that way. So thank you.
Thank you. Further comments?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, I think it's about time we got in line with the rest of Australia, 80% of Australia that got the compulsory voting. We sit around here today voted in by 25% of the City of Juneau community, even though everybody received the voting ballot. So I would rather be voted in on 100% of the community, so we actually are representing the community.
Thank you. Further comments? If not, I'll close debate. Thank everyone for their comments and for the diversity of views. I've just captured a few foreshadowed, so I'll put these one by one. For item one, I have Councillor Pizzi's foreshadowed option one, but I'll go to option two, obviously being the one moved and seconded first. Terms of office, I have option two foreshadowed from Councillor Hutton. I understand his argument there quite well and the cost impost as well. My view on his arguments is if item one passes, I'll probably support his foreshadowed for option two, but if it doesn't, I personally would stay on the two-year. And number four is internal elections. I also have that foreshadowed as well for option two, Councillor Hutton. So I'll work through these one by one. I'll end my comments there, and I'll put the motion for item one participation first and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed, and that is carried. For item two, terms of office, with option two foreshadowed, I'll put the option one and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed, and that is carried. For option three, voting method, nothing foreshadowed there. I'll put that item and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed, and that is carried. Option four, I'll put that motion, noting that there's one foreshadowed, which is internal elections, item four, sorry, and ask you to cast your vote. Declare the voting closed, and that item is carried. Item five, which is accessibility,
So supporting advocacy positions, option 2 and 3. I put that item and ask you to cast your vote. That's both in person and postal. Thank you. Declare the voting closed, and that is carried. And method 6, item 6, method of election of mayor, support for advocacy position 1. Put that motion and ask you to cast your vote. Thank you. Declare the voting closed, and that is carried. We proceed then to item 12.6, workers' compensation insurance item. Do I have a mover for the officer's recommendation? I'm happy to move. Do I have a seconder? Seconded to Councillor Pizzi. Thank you. I don't wish to speak to the motion at this stage, although I'll reserve my right to close debate at the end. Councillor Pizzi?
I reserve my right.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move the amendment circulated earlier this evening.
Thank you. So moved. Do I have a seconder for that amendment? Seconded Councillor Kingston. Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you. Yes, it is just a slight minor amendment to the item, just to request that the CEO bring back a report to the Council on the proposed appointment of the independent consultant, just to give some improved or greater clarity and confirmation around that process. I appreciate the work that's been done in the information that's been presented. I'm not going to go into it. There's been a bit of detail provided, and I appreciate that. It's a complex area and an area that costs the city a reasonable sum of money and is obviously a key part of our risk management for the city. So I think it's important we approach this and undertake a process as best we can. And note also that there's really no clear understanding of what this might cost until that process is undertaken for an RFQ. So I think it's important that it comes back to the city so that we can have an understanding, back to the council, so we have an understanding of what that cost is and the implications before we proceed down that path. So I'd ask that you support part 3. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Yes, just briefly, I'll be supporting this just so we have more clarity around it. I would encourage other elected members to turn to page 73 for the financial budget implications. It says here that the city's premium for workers' compensation paid to LGIS in 23-24 financial year was $694,925. And so given that's what we are paying annually, I think it's worthwhile that we have this independent consultant engaged to undertake a market analysis, as is what is suggested by the administration. And given the scale of the contract at nearly $700,000, I think it's a good sense check to make sure that the council gets a report on what is proposed for that independent consultant to look at. I think that's sensible, given the scale of the contract.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor, given that this minor amendment was submitted at about 12 minutes before the meeting started, according to my email, could I please request through you, Mr. Mayor, office a comment on this amendment, but also specifically I'd like to inquire as to any cost impacts of this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Parry?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I think Councillor Raftus may have circulated those officer comments. However, the appointment of an independent consultant would be undertaken in accordance with our request, or as a request for quotation, in accordance with the Council's procurement policy and its protocols and delegations of legislation normally. All procurement does include declarations and management of conflicts of interest, and the RFQ is in development and is proposed to be finalised and advertised in quarter 2. So if this amendment does go through, then it will establish some tighter timeframes for us, but I think that they will be achievable. It is at the Council's prerogative to determine whether it wishes to be involved in the appointment of the consultant to undertake the analysis. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Mayor?
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor. I note in the email from Councillor Ruff, this doesn't reference the officer's comments. They happen to be attached at the bottom, so given it was submitted 12 minutes before the meeting, little chance of elected members to see them, let alone read them. I haven't read them, but I shall read them whilst this debate is continuing. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. If not, Councillor Raftis, do you wish to close on the amendment?
Yes, certainly. Thank you. Yes, just to clarify some of those comments. Yes, it's not an overly complex addition to the process. As was noted, in terms of the premium paid, $694,000, that reflects a percentage of 1.19%, also noted within the report. It could go up to 3.15%, so almost three times that amount. So this is a significant sum of money that the city could be up for as part of an annual premium, and I think it's important we undertake as more most detailed process that we can in considering how we review this level of expenditure and steps going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll put that amendment and ask you to cast your votes. Sorry, didn't realise Councillor Hamilton Prime was out. Declare the voting closed and the amendment is carried. We return to debate on the primary motion. Is there any further discussion? If not, I will close debate and ask you to cast your votes. Councillor Chester. Thank you. Declare the voting closed and the item is carried. Item 12.7, Councillor Raftis. To seek to move officer's recommendation.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill, did you want a second? Councillor Raftis.
Thank you. It's a follow-up question to one of the queries from the briefing session around works done at Duncraig Leisure Centre. Seems the question was confused and all was provided was a list of all the work undertaken by Hickey Constructions. So the question was around a particular line item for expenditure at Duncraig Leisure Centre and whether that was passed on or recovered from the tenant or not.
Director?
Thank you through you, Mr. Mayor. I'll need to take that question on notice, and Councillor Raftis, I'm happy to work with you after the council meeting just to identify that specific line item, and I'll be able to provide that clarification for you.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not sure whether this is right or not, but I'm just seeking an amendment in relation to this for the on-the-spot rewards protocol, which I queried earlier, and I spoke to Director Humphrey prior to him going on leave to get a copy of the report. So I'm just wondering if I could put the amendment in that copy of this protocol, the on-the-spot rewards protocol, is provided to the elected members for viewing.
I mean, it's the agenda item is noting the list of accounts paid under delegated authority. So it's not really an amendment. It's more of an alternate if you wish to add something in like that.
Yes, if I could.
My recommendation, we're well past that point procedurally. Right. My recommendation is it can be taken up next month and okay. Do so.
I'll be happy to work offline with the officers in relation to this. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Raftis, do you wish to close? I'll put the motion then and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed and the item is carried.
Item 12.10, LIFAC installations at City of Joondalup venues. Councillor Fizzy.
Thank you. I just make a statement for LIFAC. So LIFAC has been used successfully 3,000 times to relieve airway blockage.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor. We need to move and second first.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. You are correct. Councillor Pizzi, you're moving. Do I have a seconder for the motion? Seconded, Councillor May. Councillor Pizzi. Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor Pizzi.
Sorry, I'll say it again. LIFAC has been used successfully 3,000 times to release airway blockage, with the youngest recipient being a three-week-old baby, which caused no harm or barotrauma. LIFAC has a patented one-way valve that prevents the object being forced further into the airway. In the deputations at the briefing session, risk of damage to an airway was cited as a concern to deter the use of the LIFAC. Edema will be caused to an airway when there has been an object stuck up against the wall of an airway, whether that object is cleared or not. Barotrauma was also cited as a concern. However, the literature shows that barotrauma can be caused by the sudden release of an occlusion, not necessarily by the act of releasing the occlusion, i.e. by any means. But as stated already, LIFAC has been used on the most delicate of lungs of a three-week-old baby, and no damage or barotrauma was done. The volume of the LIFAC plunger and the negative pressure it generates acts only against the occluded object, not the lungs of the victim. The International Liaison Committee for Resuscitation, ILCOR, in its literature review, has found that while harm has been reported from back blows, abdominal thrusts, chest thrusts, and blind finger sweeps, no case reports of harm were found from the use of McGill's forceps used by trained professionals and suction-powered airway clearance devices like the LIFAC. If we want to talk about risk, the failure to appropriately and responsibly determine the relative and comparable risks associated with each measure, CPR carries risk, defibrillation carries risk, and in the rapidly deteriorating patient, when there is a failure of the ANSCoR measures, the risk in the use of an alternative like the LIFAC compared to any other measure is not significant when compared to death or serious brain injury. In recent studies, 96.2% of LIFAC cases were used successfully after first aid measures failed, proving that it does not delay first aid and or resuscitation guidelines, proving what the TGA have already stated from the two-year post-review, that they found no delay to first aid and resuscitation, and LIFAC was only used when those life-saving measures failed, and we know here in Australia that they fail 50% of the time. CPR is a resuscitation tool used for unconscious, non-breathing patients. Unfortunately, someone with upper airway obstruction, which has led to cardiac arrest, is already oxygen-deprived, and therefore CPR is much less effective, as you are only pumping around already deoxygenated blood. There is no evidence that CPR compressions relieve an airway obstruction in a living person, only sometimes in a deceased person. LIFAC has been used successfully in unconscious persons to quickly and effectively clear upper airway obstructions. Ambulance response times in Australia have gone from bad to worse. St John's ambulance response time targets are to get a priority one, their highest urgency level, in 15 minutes of a call. They achieved this month, 78.8% of the time. Think now about how long 15 minutes is. After 4 to 6 minutes of deoxygenation, brain damage is likely, and after 6 to 10 minutes, brain damage is probable. Even if the ambulance gets to the victim before the 10-minute mark, the ambulance officers will not necessarily be trained in advanced airway care and support. LIFAC has been used to save not only lives, but it's also to preserve neurological function. LIFAC is not replacing first aid measures, but is an adjunct to be utilised when these measures fail. I have resuscitated many people in hospitals and out on the street as an advanced life support trained nurse, and you would not be able to use a device like LIFAC if a person was still able to clear their own airway. I have looked into the eyes of children who were turning blue, and adults unable to breathe. And I'm telling you now, there is not a sinking feeling in the world that can compare to those moments. And you would give anything for a device such as LifeVac to clear that airway. I would not want to be the councillor tonight to vote this opportunity down and read in the paper that another person or child has died in the city of Joondalup when you had the opportunity to put this device into facilities that could have saved that life. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor May.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I reserve my right.
Thank you. Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. When it comes to emergencies, having access to life-saving equipment can make the difference between life and death, and a principle that this council has already recognised by installing defibrillators in our facilities. And I can personally attest to the importance of such equipment, as a defibrillator saved the life of a friend at Trigg Beach one day. In choking emergencies, when traditional first aid methods like abdominal thrust or back blows fail, LifeVac devices can provide critical life-saving support. My own research is that LifeVac is the only airway clearance device with the backing from multiple peer-reviewed medical publications and independent testing that confirms its safety, effectiveness and ease of use. The statistics speak for themselves. LifeVac has documented over 1,400 lives saved, with more than 900 of those lives being children with no adverse effects reported. In fact, a study conducted on mannequins, LifeVac was found to be more effective at clearing blocked airways than abdominal thrusts or competing devices. And additionally, a separate study using cadavers revealed that a 98% success rate on the first attempt and 100% success rate on the second. In choking emergencies, having a reliable and easy-to-use device can prevent unnecessary deaths, and LifeVac stands out as a leading registered anti-choking device recognised by the Australian Register of Therapeutic Goods as a Class 1 medical device. In its design for quick, it is designed for quick and effect relief, making it essential in public settings, whether at home, in a restaurant, or in a community-based venue. This device could be the difference between life and death for someone choking. Given the life-saving potential of LifeVac devices and the track record of safety and success, I strongly support the motion to install them in our community-based venues. This council has already taken important steps to ensure public safety with defibrillators. Adopting LifeVac devices would be a natural and necessary extension of that commitment, and I thank Councillor Fizzy for bringing this matter to the attention of the council, and I fully support the motion. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Further comments? Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just want to firstly concur the commentary from Councillor Fishwick. I think it's important that we reflect on how important the installation of DFibs have been in our community facilities, and this is a further addition that could provide life-saving treatment for everyone, and I think it's so very important. And for the price of what's listed, $5,200, it's a very small price to pay, not only for peace of mind, but for that one potential chance for it to happen to somebody, that there's actually something that can actually make the difference, that can save a life. And I think that is powerful. I like to think, as a city and a community, we are about promoting community health and well-being, and this goes to the very heart of that. That's about life-saving provision, and I'm very, very supportive of this going ahead and being supported and being funded. LifeVac airway clearance devices are an important part of that particular circumstance. The evidence speaks for itself, and I'm very, very supportive of having that in community facilities. I think they're an important part of it, and in those points where Councillor Fizzy did mention where those people and children are turning blue in the face, people and parents, I'm not one myself, but I can only imagine what you would be thinking in that situation if only you had that potential device. Well, let's do that. Let's put those devices in our community facilities and let's be fair dinkum about community safety and health and well-being. We are a city that is bold, creative and prosperous. This is a small price to pay to keep our community safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. LifeVac is something that can save a life, potentially. It's a cost of $5,200. And I don't know what you were all voting this evening, but I would say think really carefully about what you would put on the value of your own life if something that is potentially there as a last measure to save your life, what sort of value you'd put on that. I have three children and I've faced situations like this before. I can agree with Councillor Pizzi that it is a scary thing. And if you've got something like this for a cost of $5,000, how can you say no to that?
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Ventura?
I just want to echo the sentiment that's been around the table from my fellow colleagues. In particular, Councillor O'Neill made a very strong statement there. As a parent, there is no price. You would invest any amount of money to protect your young offspring. And what we've heard this evening is an opportunity to ensure that we give our residents the absolute best outcome at our community-based venues if a situation was to arise with choking. I think it would be remiss of us for the pittance that's on the table here to not invest in this life-saving, changing opportunity. So I will be fully supporting, and I want to commend Councillor Pizzi and the efforts that have been taken to bring this to council, and I look forward to supporting this initiative.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It seems to be a common thing, but I have a dissenting opinion on this. I do understand the sensitivities around this issue. There's a lot of people which have been in these environments where somebody close to them has been choking. But to me, it's about trying to look at the evidence about whether this device has the efficacy that it is said to have, and whether it is the most appropriate thing to be rolling out given the level of evidence that is available in peer-reviewed journals and from the medical community on this particular device. And to me, that's where my concern comes to on this, is that, and I raised this in the briefing session, to me is that I think fundamentally we should be looking at what has the health department already looked at this, or the international liaison and resuscitation, or the Australian Resuscitation Council in relation to these products, or the Resuscitation Council in the UK. These devices are not recommended from those agencies at this time. Maybe they will be, maybe it will not. And we heard a lot today about, from Councillor Fishwick, about the independent testing which has occurred in peer-reviewed articles. And I also have read nearly all of the peer-reviewed articles in relation to this device, which was quite a number of them. And to me, the one I continually come back to is the article from 2023 by Ramaswamy et al. And in that one, they examined this device. They tested it on cadavers. They tried to simulate as close as possible to a choking environment. Of course, it would be unethical to test on humans. And they obstructed the airways of the cadavers. They first attempted with barium crystals. They then also simulated with cashews and grapes. And this device did not remove in the cadaver studies the cashews and grapes. There's a large number of studies which talk about mannequins, but mannequins are very different from soft tissue. They're hard plastic. And then secondly, this article as well also looked at the existing peer-reviewed data around this. And one of the commentaries which they made is that there was a thorough systematic review by Dunn et al. However, details notable flaws in studies, that's the body of literature around this device, that there is namely a high risk of bias. So, and they describe that as industry involvement and reporting bias, and that generally there was a decreased generalizability of mannequin results and a low certainty of evidence despite the high success rate of dislodgements that were advertised. And so that's why they conducted their own studies with the cadavers, and they felt that the device generally did not work to remove obstructions of grapes and cashews. And so looking at all that, their opinion was, and this was done by a collection of medical doctors, and they were all independent, they had no relationships with the company, they were not being paid off, paid by the company, they did not receive any grant funding from anyone related to the device, but their opinion was that LifeVac should not replace abdominal thrusts and back blows as the treatment of choice for choking, and they further recommended that further independent studies must be conducted before these devices can be marketed as a secondary treatment option. So to me, I feel like as a council, we are rushing into a decision here which the medical community is uncertain on. They have not come to a clear opinion on. Many of the early studies were done by relatives of the owners of LifeVac in the US. And to me, we need to wait, in my opinion, until there is a further certainty around evidence. A lot of what we've heard tonight about X number of people that the device has worked on, all of these are self-reported statistics by the company. We don't have the certainty that we have around these. And once again, if outside of controlled clinical settings with mannequins that these devices don't have the success rates that they claim they do, this idea of using it as a secondary treatment does actually come with risks that are attached to people's lives. Is that instead of standard treatments, which might work, which might have, say, a 50% chance, as we heard earlier, we could be placing people in a situation where they no longer actually receive recommended treatment or care for a minute or two. And when we're dealing with...
Are you seeking an extension?
Yes, please.
I'm happy to move. Do I have a seconder? Secondly, Councillor Raftus. By a show of hands, those in favour. Against? Declare that carried. Thank you, Councillor.
Thank you. I'll just conclude briefly. As I said, in these emergency environments, there's a very short period of time. It might be 3 minutes, 4 minutes, as we heard earlier, brain injury within 4 minutes, significant brain injury within six. To say as well that we're going to have a situation where somebody is a first responder and they're going to run and obtain this device next to where a defibrillator is kept and then return back to the patient and then be able to utilize this device in time, I think these are very tight time frames that are even tighter than the use of a defibrillator. If somebody's airway is blocked, as was rightly said tonight, is that they have a shorter life expectancy compared to somebody who's in cardiac arrest. Cardiac arrest could be up to 12 minutes. Somebody whose airway is obstructive could be down at 4 to 6. So I think we've got a significant decision in front of us. And, of course, there's always the argument, as we heard from Councillor Vinciullo, that if it only saves one life, but I can't remember if it was Councillor Vinciullo or Councillor Hamilton Prime who said that, we should roll it out if it only saves one life, if there's that chance. But given that the medical community is actually divided on this device and it's not being recommended by any of the international bodies that focus on resuscitation, and it wasn't even recommended by the Australian Life Saving Society, sorry, the Royal Life Saving Society when we asked them and their comments, I just think we've got... I think it's concerning to try and roll it out until we actually have that robust, independent studies of this device. So at this time, I'm not voting for this. I think this is risky, and if we could be placing people in situations of risk by denying standard treatments of care, and especially when I don't think as a council, if medical doctors in 2023 impartially have looked at this device, they've tried to make it work, and they can't seem to feel that at this time they can recommend it, there should be further studies, I think that's a red flag for us. I think it should be, at least. It is for me. So I'd encourage everyone to have a bit more concern over the divided opinions on this.
Thank you. Councillor May is seconder.
Oh, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I'd like to commend Councillor Pizzi for her hard work and advocacy on this, and even more so the courage of Zaza's father for getting up and telling us his story. It's hard enough to get up in front of a chamber when you're not talking about the loss of your child, let alone what he's done and the work he's done to raise awareness this issue as well. I don't. There's no way I could have had that courage to do that. Yeah, I think Zaza was very blessed to have the father that he has. Now, on to this issue. My understanding is that the LifeVac device, when you work out how to use it, it tells you for use after attempting first aid, and first aid has a failure rate of, from what I'm hearing, 50%. We rightfully have, as mentioned previously, you call 000, which is standard, and they will probably tell you to try first aid even. Try back blows. I'm not a medical professional, but everyone can call 000 and get those instructions. When that's not working and someone's dying, I hear a lot of debate around this chamber in 7 years on council. I've always understood conflicting arguments, even if I haven't agreed with them, but I've never been in a position where I'm genuinely baffled that when someone's dying and a device might work, and first aid has failed, that it's better not to use a device that might work and let someone die while you're waiting for an ambulance. Genuinely baffled by any argument that I hear around that. Just has no logical sense to me, and that's just my view. There's not much more I can say about this. I'm not going to talk about studies because anyone can pick out studies and say, well, it works, it doesn't work. You can find studies that say cigarette smoking isn't bad for you. I mean, seriously, doctors recommend cigarettes for a sore throat. Excuse my French. There's plenty of historical cases where doctors are divided on things or doctors have got it wrong. That's why when you have complex operations, doctors will get together and try and work out the best way to treat someone or someone with certain rare cancers. Because sometimes they'll get it wrong. Like, they are very intelligent and people that I admire, but they are human beings like the rest of us. So, again, I'm not going to cherry pick studies. I'm not an academic on this issue, but just basic logic. If first aid doesn't work and your alternative is a device that could work or someone dying, I think it's quite obvious what any rational person would do. So I commend Councillor Pizzi again, and I encourage everyone to support this motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor May. Would you perhaps like to withdraw one reference that you made there and apologise in case anyone took it as an objectionable?
Oh, I'm happy to apologise to any reference I made in terms of not understanding the logic.
Oh, no, I meant more the term the term bloody.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, excuse my French, and I withdraw that comment and apologise. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, debate's healthy, and it's difficult sometimes. However, I'm sure there was some pushback with penicillin in the day, so I will be supporting this motion.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks to you, Mr. Mayor. I'll just go straight from the bat and say that I'm fully supportive of this recommendation and also endorse the work done by Councillor Pizzi and others on this. However, I wasn't planning to speak on this, but I feel compelled to raise a certain issue and speak on this. I think from the briefing session, and it was pretty obvious that there wasn't necessarily going to get unanimous support. If I had been unsupportive of this recommendation, I just feel that some of the commentary used in terms of encouraging elected members to vote for it probably makes me uncomfortable, even though I'm supportive. So if I wasn't supportive, I'd be very uncomfortable. So I'm mindful that we should respect each other's views on this and just urge elected members to be careful with the wording they use in persuading elected members to come around to their opinion. And I'll just repeat, I'm supportive of this motion. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Deputy Mayor. Much appreciated. Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, I do have a question. In the comment, it says any piece of equipment that aids dislodging blocked airways is worth exploring. Now, it then says in the recommendation that council agrees to install. I'm just wondering what the administration's definition of the word exploring is and whether or not that implies to proceeding or if that just means we should be doing an investigation or further investigation.
Thank you. Director Lay, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you.
The work that we undertook was to respond to a notice of motion, which was to examine the costs and benefits. That is something that we've obviously done and prepared a report for the elected members. So I guess in that context, that is why we're of the view that the piece of equipment is worth exploring. But through that exploration and based on our recommendation, we believe that we should proceed to install the devices in our community-based venues.
Councillor?
Yeah, so just to follow on from that, does that therefore imply the word exploring in the comment that this is a trial and that at some point we may be reviewing this and keeping our position updated as more scientific evidence becomes available?
Director.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. I wouldn't consider our recommendation to be a trial. We are recommending that we do install them. I do note, however, that in the report as well, it does identify the issues that may result from the devices being either removed or vandalised, and if that happened on a recurring, if it happened many times, it'd be something we'd have to review. So I think in summary, it's certainly not the intention of the recommendation for it to be a trial, but we would obviously be open to reviewing their installation if there was a need to.
Councillor?
Yeah, I guess with that comment and given some of the comments that have been made previously, I'm going to suggest an amendment, if I may. So the wording would read as is, except at the end we would insert with a review to be completed after 12 months and presented to Council for consideration.
I'm just going to seek some governance advice on Councillor Hutton proposing an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Could Councillor Hutton please repeat it as I was talking to Kylie during that? I apologise.
Yeah, so the wording would remain as is, with inserted at the end, with a review to be completed after 12 months and presented to Council.
Point of order.
Councillor Peavy.
I feel like that changes the intent of the motion, and I don't think that is an amendment.
Governance. It's my judgment, I'm guessing. It comes down to, I'm thinking about it as well. It's, I guess a rollout versus a trial.
If this fails, he could make an alternate motion.
Councillor In looking at the meeting procedures, while I agree that it is a change, I don't think it negates. Director Parry?
3, Mr. Mayor. Clause 9.12 provides that an amendment to a primary motion can only take a number of forms. However, it also must be relevant to the primary motion which is moved and must not have the effect of negating the primary motion. So it depends on what is intended by a review to be completed after 12 months, whether that would require the deinstallation following 12 months as you are implementing these and putting in practice a whole form of information and education and awareness to members of the public as well. If the review was only to provide information on its success to date and including whether there was any acts of vandalism or any other issues or challenges, that would probably fit the intent of the amendment or fit the intent of the primary motion.
Thank you for that advice. Councillor Hutton, my advice is it's probably better done as a call for a report of a review if the item passes rather than attaching it as an amendment, because it's a bit open-ended the way that you proposed it.
I am happy to seek guidance on the exact wording, but the intent, as suggested by the Director of Governance, was my intent, just for us to make sure it's proceeding as we expect and there isn't any new evidence that comes to light that might suggest we're going down the wrong path.
Director Perry.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor, accepting the intent of Councillor Hutton, I guess it's trying to find the appropriate wording that meets that particular intent without having something presented to me at the moment. So if Councillor Hutton or the Mayor or any other elected members have any ideas, it would be greatly appreciated.
Point of order. Can we have my motion and have Councillor Hutton as a second part of that and vote on them separately?
That would be the intention, yes. I think I would seek, well, in the first instance, we'll consider an amendment. I would just seek, my recommendation is a point two, that a report reviewing the evidence of efficacy of LifeVac installations be provided to the councils. Councillor Hutton, it's your proposed amendment.
I'm happy with the initial wording I suggested as a point B, with a review of the rollout to be completed after 12 months and presented to council.
Point of order, I think that is too open-ended and I'm not happy for that to be added.
No, it's my rule, Council, unfortunately, I have to rule on that, but I agree, I think that's very open-ended. I think the intent of the motion, well, it's an officer's recommendation following a recall from report from Councillor Pizzi, is to roll out. I think it would be tidier in a governance sense done as a call for a report separately, which is open to you, Councillor Hutton. I would recommend that course of action.
Sorry, can you just clarify what you mean by a call for a report separately?
So you can call for a report at a committee meeting. You have a right to just simply call for a report there. You don't notice a notice of motion, or you can do a notice of motion to call for a report at a council meeting. I think the wording that you've suggested there, as I've taken it verbally, and given the rulings that I've made previously on amendments and the advice from Director of Governance, I think being open-ended does run the risk of negating the intent, which is to roll out. The council would need to, after reviewing in the future, if it decided to withdraw the rollout, consciously do so. So I do think it negates, yes. But there are other avenues for a call for a report.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I accept the ruling. I will then proceed with making a comment. Obviously, I came into this evening's meeting, to be honest, being largely in support of the motion. I would have said the exact same comments. If it saves one life, we must proceed. However, I do think we do need to proceed with caution. I guess, again, reflecting on the officer's comment, that we should basically be, so let me just pull up the exact wording, my laptop has just shut on me. But you know, effectively saying that we should further investigate this and further look into it. I'm concerned we might be jumping the gun. However, there's some comments made about not understanding the logic. I would echo the comments made by Councillor Kingston, which is, if after 4 minutes you effectively have minimised the chance of having full brain function, the risk we're effectively experiencing is that if someone switches over from the more contemporary and standard life-saving measures to this machine too early, and they haven't fully explored the option, you can be doing these manoeuvres but actually having an impact but not making it noticeable. So, yeah, there is some concerns I have there. I will support the wording of the motion as it is. However, I will note I will be calling for a report. I think it's very important that as new information becomes available, I hope that the city is able to provide data from its machines to independent reviewers. But yes, I will support it. I do think the comments being made, that there are some risks associated with this. I don't think we can just willfully jump into this and think, oh, if it saves one life, because there actually is a risk, as Councillor Kingston has pointed out, that someone could switch to using this machine at a point too early, they could miss effectively the 4 minute cut-off, and you could actually end up causing more harm than good. I just don't have the information in front of me at the moment to say either way. I'm happy to give it a try and support it, but I do think as a council we should be prepared to review it. I will call for a report at a separate committee later on. So yes, I support it with caution, and I don't think we should, as we go into those possible reports and reviews, I don't think we should just celebrate this as a massive success. We do have to approach with caution. We always have to put the best scientific evidence as it becomes available first. So, yeah, I'll round off with saying that. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor. Further comments? Councillor Raftus?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's a tough conversation. Obviously, it's a very emotional topic, and then the reference is only $5,000, so why don't we just go ahead and do it? Only needs to save one life. I think we need to just approach it in a proper manner. We look at the comments and the report that's prepared, and any consultation we had was from the Life Saving Society, and they really didn't really have much support for the matter and the item. So don't know how, and also the comments around risk management considerations for the city, and that reference and report of sort of it's worth exploring. Is this the only product that meets this requirement? Are there alternatives? I don't know that we've actually undertaken that process. We've just ploughed in and say, yes, let's just go in and install these in our community-based venues. You know, are they areas where there's a high risk of choking happening? Should we be taking more of an advocacy role in terms of having the state government drive that these be installed across the state in food premises? So what's our role in the matter in the process? So it's a tough one to deal with. I don't think how we stand currently on this item that I'm there in terms of signing off on it. I think we needed to have more process undertaken and be assured as to the actual product, its capabilities, and its ability to deliver and save a life and not necessarily cost one. So at this stage, I'm not there yet. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Before I go to Councillor Pizzi to close, just a couple of comments from myself, and I want to thank everyone for their contribution. I want to particularly thank Mr. Brian Boger for the two statements that he has made to Council and the deputation that he has made on this matter. I'm sure here I speak for every person around the table. We can't imagine what that experience was like for him, and I truly hope that he and his son and the rest of the family can find peace and purpose going beyond that tragedy that occurred. In terms of the device itself and the rollout that's before us, I had a front row seat to a CPR intervention where somebody had gone and was brought back. I'm fortunate to be married to a nurse who lives in that world, as Councillor Pizzey does, and is trained in advanced life support. I note some of the concerns around this device, and as we saw at the deputations as well, on potential secondary injuries. And look, they're real. I have no doubt that there is a potential for secondary injury. But can I tell you, and I know Councillor Fishwick has also experienced first-hand CPR, proper CPR induces second-hand injury. The one that we were involved in, and my wife was on the man's chest for several minutes. We brought him back and we broke several of his ribs. We did significant damage. We're fortunate that the family included a paramedic who said, well done, you did it properly. It is rough. It is impactful experience. And having exhausted all of the correct CPR options in a choking scenario, with a child or with an adult, but particularly with the child, I would just want this here. Because as Councillor May said, if you have done all of the correct CPR and the ambulance is still 15 to 20 minutes away, you want something like this here, because the only other alternative is to watch that person die in front of you, which is what happened to Mr. Boger. In terms of the importance of CPR and agreed CPR by international standards, we can hold our heads high. Not only do we provide defibrillators at all of our facilities, we directly subsidise through the sponsorship that we provide to our surf clubs, one of the largest levels of sponsorship anywhere in the state, some of the greatest community first aid, first responder training that you see anywhere in WA. And that's right throughout our community. The other reason that I like this device is the instructions, which anybody is going to need, very, very clearly spell out exactly what you need to do and exactly what the CPR procedures are that you go to first. In that moment of panic, that brief instruction document can be a lifesaver, and it makes very clear that the other methods are what you do first. The device itself communicates that in a very clear way, but then if all else fails and the only option, which Mr. Boger experienced, is to watch them go, I would want this device, and I'm very strongly supportive of this motion. Councillor Pizzey.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to talk about some of the comments first, Councillor Raftus, that are there risks of choking in the venues that these are going? Well, the Luka Foreshore was where Zaza passed away, and it is one of the venues where this is proposed to go. So, yes, I would say that they are appropriate venues for the life back. Just another comment for a four-minute cut-off. I mean, I don't know any four-minute cut-off to resuscitation when you're involved in a resuscitation. You follow the guidelines and they tell you what to do. And it's only once those steps have been exhausted and have failed and that person is going to die that life back is used. I want to thank Brian for the advocacy for his son and the City of Joondalup community. It's been very brave. Just a few more comments, please. I'd like to bring your attention again to the TGA findings from a two-year product review that LifeVac did not delay recommended resuscitation treatments and LifeVac has not caused harm during its use, the TGA, the governing body. And to the International Liaison Committee for Resuscitation Treatment recommendations based on currently available evidence, reinforce the guidelines provided by LifeVac in its instructions for use and further discredits the instructions for use by the Australian Resuscitation Council as divergent from the worldwide consensus of evidence and their evidence review. I would also note that the Royal Life Saving is not a governing body for medical device approval. The Department of Health and Ageing, that has under its responsibilities the Therapeutic Goods Administration, is the legislated regulator of medical devices in Australia. The argument that more research or evidence is needed is a throwaway line that is largely moot point as a study to meet this requirement cannot be described by any organisation short of conducting impossible, unethical, randomised controlled trials on live subjects. It would only...
Sorry, I think that's an address reflection that it's a throwaway line and to suggest that there should be more studies is unethical because it'd be on live subjects. The academic articles I've read have suggested that they could...
No, Councillor Kingston, a point of order is not an opportunity for you to debate a point.
Yeah,
Don't speak over me, Councillor Kingston. I've told you that many times. You objected to the reference to a throwaway line. Was there another objection in your point of order?
The throwaway line, the next sentence went to because it would be unethical to be suggesting that there should be further studies. So the phrase...
So say that again.
Line, the phrase throwaway line was connected to the next phrase.
Yes.
And the next phrase said it was a throwaway line because... it meant further studies would be unethical to be conducted. Or further studies couldn't
I will uphold your point of order insofar as the throwaway line, but from what I heard about the point about studies being conducted on live subjects being unethical, I thought that was a point you yourself made in the debate, Councillor Kingston.
Yes, it is.
Well, then but I don't see any problem with reference.
I made it in a different context. This context was saying that there's the impossibility of any further study that would be suitable.
I struggle with that point. I heard, from what I heard of Councillor Pizzi, she was confirming what you yourself had raised in debate, which is studies on live subjects would be unethical. But the point on the throwaway line, I think that should be withdrawn and apologise, please, Councillor Pizzi.
I withdraw and apologise for that comment.
Thank you, Councillor Pizzi.
Thank you. It cannot be described by any organisation short of conducting impossible, unethical, randomised controlled trials on live subjects. It would only be required if the life act was suggested to replace first aid measures. And it is not required of first aid measures which are largely based on anecdotal and unrelated evidence. If it is fulfilled and neglected, negated by the latest case series studies of the Life Act that recommended that Life Act is safe, effective and should be part of regular first aid practice for choking, is only required for suction-based airway clearance devices that have not been subject to the research scrutiny and analysis that Life Act has already been subject to and is not required under the strict and more rigorous management framework of medical device regulation. It's interesting that the council are asking for a report on LifeVac because, as my ending remark, I would request the city to consider LifeVac to be used as a pilot study and if it was to be voted through tonight so that other councils can learn from their implementation, LifeVac would work with this, would work with the city of Joondalup on the implementation of the public awareness program. LifeVac also provides free online training and is developing a nationally recognised non-accredited training course for use by ITOs in Australia. Thank you, everybody, for your consideration tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Pizzi. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed and the item is carried. Next item of business is 12.13, the Budget Amendment Capital Works Program projects carried forward from 23-24. I've just withdrawn this item because it requires an absolute majority. I am happy to move. Do I have a seconder? Seconded, Councillor Hamilton Prime. I don't wish to speak to the motion, Councillor Hamilton Prime. Do any elected members wish to speak to the motion? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a query regarding the Capital Works budget and the response given to query raised by one of the residents regarding the Tom Simpson car park upgrades and the reference that they were endorsed by council as part of the Capital Works program. Comment is around the reference to the taking up of area of grass. Now, it's the response implies that the council approved any change of the structure and the area that's taken up by parking, but be clarified as a question, where does this layout change presented? Was that presented to the council when the Capital Works program was signed off?
Director Classen.
Fair Mr. Mayor, it was presented to elected members through the budget development process.
and provided to the mayor and ward councillors prior to construction commenced the notification of works. A can't recall of the concept was provided as part of that notification of works, but I can check that.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, is around the matter. I speak on this matter is where items are presented, and certainly the budget process includes signing off on amounts, but needs to be made clear to those residents that inquire that the detailed plans and layouts are not necessarily provided during that process when amounts are signed off. So to have responses provided that my reading implies that it was provided. So just trying to get some clarity and confirmation around how these are treated going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Just a few comments from me closing. Be careful how far I go, because obviously it relates to the budget process. If I got the inference from Councillor Raftus correct that he didn't want residents to get the impression that we don't get plans, I mean, I have to disagree respectfully. Plans are brought forward. Plans are presented to elected members in quite considerable detail in the ward meetings, and then presented more broadly through the general budget sessions as we go through the capital works program. On the screens before us, an ample opportunity is provided every time for elected members to go through those plans, as along with the other notifications that the director gives. So it was very clearly communicated to me, Councillor Raftus, when I was there. Perhaps it was a session that you were not present in. I'm not sure. Your attendance is very good at those sessions, so I'm not suggesting that there are often ones where there aren't, but it was presented. I have a very clear recollection of the plans. I have a clear recollection of multiple times where they were brought forward. So any inference that that wasn't what officers have done for council, I don't think is fair. I'll put the motion and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed, and the item is carried. Council, we now proceed to the confidential parts of the meeting, and I'm proposing a procedural motion that Council, in accordance with Section 5.232B and EII of the Local Government Act and Clause 5.22 of the City's Meeting Procedures Local Law, resolves to close the meeting to members of the public to consider the following items, being item 13.1.1, confidential CEO concluded annual performance review, item 13.1.2, confidential salary review, and item 14.1, confidential Mindaya Regional Council waste to energy tender. 2, permits the following employees to remain for item 13.1.1 and 13.1.2, which are the salary review, being the Director of Governance and Strategy, Mr. Jamie Parry, and the Manager of Governance, Mrs. Kylie Bergman. I would also ask that the CEO remain. I would include for 13.1.1 that the CEO remain, but that he leave for 13.1.2. Just if in there are, in case there are any questions of you, Mr. CEO, but then ask you to exit at that point. And then 3, permits the employees listed, I won't go through all 9 of them, for the discussion on the waste to energy tender, and I'd include at 3.10 Hannah Tagore from the City's Media and Marketing team. So moved. I have a seconder, seconded Deputy Mayor. By a show of hands, those in favour, those against, declare that carried unanimously. Thank you. To those in the gallery, these are big items. We will be on these for a while, I suspect. Can I please have the motion up on the screen, if possible? I need to read it all out. Oh, gosh, I have to read all of them aloud. Thank you. So, in regards to item 13.1.1, confidential CEO concluded annual performance review, the Council has moved Mayor Jacob, seconded Councillor May, that Council by an absolute majority notes the performance review for Mr. James Pearson, CEO, has been completed for the period of 1 July 23 to 30 June 24, endorses the CEO recruitment and performance review confidential concluded annual performance review as presented by the Price Consulting Group and detailed in Attachment 1, and adopts as amended and inclusive of an additional measurements column in the key performance indicators for the 24-25 review period as detailed in Attachment 2 to this report. For item 13.1.2, which had a slight change, moved Mayor Jacob, seconded Councillor May, that the Council, one, acknowledges that the Salaries and Allowances Tribunal has determined, 5th of April 2024, that the local government band classifications have been increased by 4%, effective from 1 July 24. Two, receives the consultant's report to inform the annual CEO Remuneration Review 2024. And three, adopts the CEO's total rewards package to be an increase of 4%, resulting in a total amount of $414.62, effective from 1 August 2024. And in relation to item 14.1... moved Councillor Hill, seconded Councillor Hutton. The Council, one, defers consideration of the MRC waste-to-energy tender to a special Council meeting to be convened on a date to be determined by the Mayor. Two, notes the heightened community concern in respect to the operation of the Tamala landfill site. And three, requests the MRC to investigate options to expedite the closure of the Tamala Park landfill in a timely and orderly manner. Thank you. Next item is item 14.2, appointment of a representative to the Mindari Regional Council. I'll just go to that item if you bear with me. So we have before us a recommendation. And I would seek nominations. Obviously, point two of the recommendation is noting that Councillor May continues to be the CEO, the City of Joondalup's representative on Mindari Regional Council, but seek nominations for representatives to Mindari Regional Council. Deputy Mayor?
Yes, I'd like to nominate Councillor Fishwick, and may I speak on this item, please?
Yes, but I'll seek other nominations first.
Thank you.
Councillor Kingston, did you seek...
Yes, I'll nominate for it.
Thank you. Further nominations? Okay. Well, we have a motion. Hold on. So I will go to a show of hands. So closing nominations. I have two nominations for one position. Deputy Mayor did ask if there could be an opportunity to speak. Governance have advised they are okay with it, and I will open that to the floor for comments generally, and so candidates can speak as well as elected members if they wish to make comment. Then I will go to a show of hands for the two positions, and then we'll move the motion. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thank you. I assume that Councillor Fishwick accepts the nomination. Okay. So Thank you for the opportunity to just speak on this item. It is important to me. I'm a deputy member of Catalina Regional Council, and I note the Council resolution of 5th of April 2005 that nominated representative of TPRC, now CRC, shall not be a member of MRC. I also note the Council recommendation of 20th of September 2005 that consideration be given to TPRC, now CRC, and MRC, each being represented by the Mayor or the Deputy Mayor. As Deputy Mayor, I would be happy to nominate for MRC and would resign my deputy position on CRC if considered appropriate. If I do not nominate for MRC, I am mindful that neither the current Mayor or the current Deputy Mayor will be a representative on MRC or CRC. Now, Councillor Fishwick has indicated that he wishes to nominate for MRC, and I note that he has previously sat on MRC for many years, both as a committee member and as chair. I am firmly of the opinion that the City of Joondalup, including our council and our representatives on MRC, should work with MRC and member councils to pursue a goal of completing Tamala Park landfill in 2027 and taking all practical steps to manage ongoing odour issues through the remaining life of Tamala Park landfill. I have discussed my view with Councillor Fishwick, and he has indicated that he concurs with this view and that he will endeavour to advocate for 2027 closure if elected to MRC. I am comfortable with supporting the nomination of Councillor Fishwick on that basis and noting that representation of the Mayor or Deputy Mayor is a Council recommendation only. I will not nominate for MRC at this time. I will be happy to discuss odour issues at Tamala Park with our representatives on MRC in advance of the next MRC meeting. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. If anybody wishes to make, Councillor Jones?
A question for both candidates. Are they both familiar with all the dates up until the next election of all MRC commitment?
I don't believe the MRC meeting dates have yet been set for next year. I think there's only the two dates currently for this year, one being the 19th of November, and I think there's a December meeting. Is that, what's the December? There's a workshop. There is a workshop. Do you know Director Klassen? I'm asking Director Klassen because I can't go to Director?
Looks like the 12th December is the other date, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. And I think someone mentioned there is a workshop. I think that's correct as well. Do you have that date? So there are 28th of November, 12th of December, and... it's not in my diary.
There's a workshop from Mr. Mayor. Sorry, there's a workshop on the 31st of October, so next week, Thursday.
Yep. Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Hutton?
I just wanted to ask a question following on from that. I don't have it in front of me, but we approved leave of absences before. From a governance perspective, are we aware of any leave of absence that clashes with those dates? Because we might require to appoint a stand-in delegate at the speaking. I'm just not sure. Sorry.
Fair question. I didn't recall leave dates approved for either of the candidates. Is that correct, Councillor Fisher? Yeah, no, I don't think either of the candidates for the position have got leave dates over that intervening period. And that's a fair question because of that clunky MRC. Further comments? If not, Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, I'll just briefly make the comment to say that, similar to the Deputy Mayor, representing the North Ward of Joondalup, which is directly affected by this issue, if I weren't already on Catalina Regional Council, I would have strongly considered putting my hand up for this. However, I do feel like there is an advantage being able to work alongside the community more effectively and advocate directly too. And I do believe the both of the candidates, whichever one is successful, will put forward the best interests of the city. So yeah, I just wanted to put on the record my reason for not nominating.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. I guess I'll give a short speech saying why I believe that as a candidate I'd be preferable compared to Councillor Fishwick. I think first starting off with the odour issues and the environmental concerns with this project, so with the Regional Council and with the current, not to delve into the confidential aspects, but the current issues that are being faced. I think everyone knows that as a council member I am quite firm on environmental matters in the city, whether especially around previously when we've had environmental conditions considered as part of the Ocean Reef Marina or other projects. I'm happy to take quite a strong focus on the odour issue, but not just the odour issue. I think there's ongoing issues with the water table and the leaching that's currently occurring through the first online tip, and I think we should be seriously investigating whether the second lining of the tip, the second tip's lining, has the integrity that it's stated, that it's not permeable at this stage, given the fires that have been occurring over the last couple of years. Additionally, I would say, being the North Central Ward Councillor, is that the electorate I have is next closest to the tip. I saw that the Mayor made a impartiality interest tonight, saying that Iluka was being affected by the smell, or it could at least be perceived in that suburb. So given that the two North Ward councillors can't, for their varying reasons, have decided that they cannot represent the city on the MRC, I think the next ward which is affected by the smell appears to be the North Central Ward, which is where Iluka is situated. So given that I represent the constituents in that ward, which are then being affected by the current ongoing issues, I think it is reasonable to appoint a North Central Ward Councillor. I know that Councillor Jones is not nominated. As far as leaves of absence, as Councillor Jones was suggesting earlier, no, I don't have any leaves of absence suggested for the end of the year, and I'm happy to put in the time and the effort to focus on dealing with the issues in this. And I think everyone is well aware that I do read the Mindarra Regional Council agendas when they come through, and I have raised issues before around allowances and different perceptions and opinions that I have around how some of those issues should be dealt with. And I think those do need to be a priority to sort of be discussed with the other members of the Regional Council, whether certain decisions do need to be reconsidered. So I think the issues with the MRC generally is how it's run and whether people are taking that focus. And I would say that given the focus that I've had on reading the MRC agenda as it comes through, I think people can see quite clearly that, yes, it is something that I continue to pay attention to, even though I'm not on it. And I think the other councillors are also aware of my long-standing position, which is aligned with similar discussions we've had confidentially on waste to energy and the long-term future of the MRC. But I won't touch on those.
Thank you. Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be very brief. My involvement with MRC probably goes back to its roots, back to 1987 when the constitution was first developed between the cities of Wanneroo, Perth and Stirling, and I was part of the governance team at Perth during that period, so I have a great knowledge of its how it was formed and the governance issues over the constitution. I'm also, if appointed at an MRC, I would be a strong advocate for the city's decisions on these matters, particularly at the next meeting, given that the matter this evening was deferred, given the waste-to-energy tender is a very, very important issue that really needs to be deeply considered, and I would advocate the city's position strongly at the MRC. Also, I have been a consistent advocate for waste-to-energy solutions and have been a long supporter of the development of such a facility in the Northern Corridor for recognising the potential and viable sustainable waste management solutions. And the potential for such a sustainable waste management facility on the Northern Corridor would currently be supported by the tonnages of the three councils, Joondalup, Stirling and Wanneroo, and maybe Swan can be brought into the to that as well. So I think the forward-thinking approach is crucial as we transition from reliance on landfill to a circular economy, aligning with the WA Waste Avoidance and Resource Recovery Strategy for 2030. I'm also very conscious of the odours emitted by the leach 8 problems associated at the landfill site, and fully au fait with other matters, particularly the tender and the life and the length that the MRC might continue into the future is perhaps close to be winding up. So as a governance area, I'm very au fait with that as well. So I would certainly be a strong advocate for the city's position if I was appointed this evening. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Councillor May?
Sorry, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wasn't intending to speak on this, but as the current other MRC member for Joondalup, I think my view might be relevant because I will be directly impacted by who the other person is, and I've had a great relationship with the Mayor, obviously on Council as well as MRC, and value his input and experience, not just because he's the Mayor and he has the experience, but also because he's directly impacted by and lives in the community, potentially most impacted by the odour issues as well. I experience it fleetingly when I'm passing through the area, but I don't live inside my home like hundreds of our residents do. I'll be supporting Councillor Fishwick, and I'm hopeful that other elected members will as well. I believe Councillor Fishwick is the next, if not equal, most experienced elected member to sit on MRC, particularly as you're entering some turbulent waters in the organisation in terms of some of the decisions coming up and some of the events occurring, which we discussed earlier tonight. I know Councillor Fishwick is someone that's easy to pick up the phone and have a coffee with and discuss those issues before the meeting as well and work through some of those items that have been quite contentious. I don't think Councillor Fishwick would be inclined to move motions pertaining to MRC at Joondalup and not seek to discuss with any of the MRC members on Joondalup Council around why decisions were made. So I fully support Councillor Fishwick, and I think he'll be acting in the best interest of the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Chester?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I believe Councillor Kingston is completely genuine in his commitment to the role, and I would very much like to see him on the MRC in the future. But as the MRC is in a massive state of flux at the moment, what we need is a steadying hand, an experienced person. So in this instance, I will be supporting Councillor Fishwick. Thank you.
Thank you. If no further comments, just a question.
Councillor Raftus?
I'll give Councillor Raftus a call and then take a question. Councillor Jones? Councillor Raftus?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, two candidates and obviously different strengths to the position. In this situation, I'm leaning towards giving Councillor Kingston the opportunity to step into the MRC and have an impact there and represent the city with some strength on the matter. It's a challenging scenario we have, and I think he's demonstrated that a keenness over the past year or so in terms of following up on the MRC and particularly around the future of the MRC and how the city interacts and where we sit with it. Has been a positive one around trying to exit and wind up the MRC sooner rather than later. So given that's a key driver of where we sit on this process and what we're trying to achieve, I think that is a strength that's been demonstrated and will be approached with conviction. So that's where I sit on this item. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Jones?
Just a question to Councillor Fishwick. So you can attend the 31st of the 10th, 28th of the 11th and the 12th of the 12th?
Short answer is yes.
Yeah. In order that I'm nominated by a show of hands, and I'll start Councillor Fishwick, then Councillor Kingston, by a show of hands, those in support of Councillor Fishwick. and for Councillor Kingston. Therefore, I propose that Council appoints Councillor Russell Fishwick to represent the City of Joondalup on the Mindarra Regional Council. I'm moving the motion now. Yes. Do I have a seconder for that? I'll actually go to Councillor May if he's happy to, as the other MRC member. Thank you. This isn't so much relevant to the candidacy, but obviously I have stepped down. Those reasons are twofold. One of those reasons is private and personal. I shared that with the council, and thank you for respecting that confidence. The second reason is that given where we are in our negotiations with our colleagues and the importance of the closure, I need to be able to focus my ability to be the spokesperson for the city and the City of Joondalup's position, and it is tricky to be both the spokesperson of the City of Joondalup and also then call for Mindarra Council to do something that might be different than what it's currently doing. So it frees me up to do that on behalf of all of you. Any further comments on the motion? Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks. Just to clarify a point made by Councillor Kingston, I didn't say that I can't nominate. I said that I, on this occasion, I will nominate Councillor Fishwick and explain the reasons why.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Yes, the full sentence did say can't or for whatever their reasons were. It was broader than just saying can't. So, and I guess it's worth offering a correction to Councillor May's comment about certain people not circulating notices of motion about MRC matters without bringing them to the council first or disclosing with other elected members. I presume this relates to the ITC allowances, and I think if people recall correctly, I did bring that up actually at the briefing session it was back in June, and I did actually seek guidance from the mayor and the director for governance at that time. So I don't believe that's correct.
Point of personal explanation, if I can. You can comment to the item. We have
another. Oh, I'm happy to comment on the item. My comment was not relating to anyone other than to say Councillor Fishwick, I don't believe, would bring motions relating to MRC to City of Joondalup Council to consider without at least asking the two MRC members on City of Joondalup why certain decisions were made. I never made reference to any other elected member other than Councillor Fishwick. Thank you.
Thank you. If no further comments, I'll put the motion and ask you to cast your votes. Thank you. Declare the voting closed and the item carried. I now propose, or I'll be seeking a mover for an exception resolution that pursuant to clause 4.83 of the Meeting Procedures Local Law, adoption by exception resolution that Council adopts 12.1, 12.3, 12.5, 12.8, 12.9, 12.11 and 12.212. Moved Councillor Jones, seconded Councillor Hamilton Prime. Don't generally discuss these. I will put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and those items are carried unanimously. Thank you. We proceed now to urgent business, of which there is none. Motions of which previous notice has been given. 16.1, notice of motion number 1, Councillor Kingston, petition to Legislative Assembly, please.
Yes, I'd like to move the motion as written.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Seconded Councillor O'Neill. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. This is quite a straightforward motion. I think everyone's heard of it through the week. It quite simply seeks that the City of Joondalup becomes the lead petitioner to the Legislative Assembly of the Western Australian Parliament to request them, and the exact petition text is in everyone's attachments, to that if the Western Australian Planning Commission grants approval for the development at Warwick Quarter, that the government cancel the approval. It very simply acts on Section 284 of the Planning and Development Act, which gives the governor the ability to cancel an approval. The governor, in a piece of legislation, acts on the advice of the Legislative Council, the Executive Council, the Executive Council is just the Premier and the Ministers. So the petition is asking basically that if the Parliament, that if the Western Australian Planning Commission decides that they do wish to, if the Western Australian Planning Commission does decide that they want to approve this development, that the Parliament exercises the power to cancel the approval. It's important that if we do intend to petition, that we do this before any approval is given, and the clear reason for that is that if we were of the mind to petition after an approval is given, is that there'd be all the time it would take to get signatures, but then secondly, that if a large period of time elapses between any approval given and then if any sort of cancellation, if it occurs, is that the developer could likely incur tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars of loss in those cases. So if the cancellation of approval was to be given, if an approval was made and then it was cancelled, that would have to be done very soon after, probably within a week or so. So because the developer would seek to practically commence the development that he is intending. So, of course, we don't know what the Planning Commission will do, but it's about what level of risk we believe that the community has here. Let's say it might be a 50-50 chance that approval might occur. It might be less. It might be down at 10%, 90-10. But even in both cases, this is the decision. The planning approval, if given, is likely to completely change the lifestyle, and not just the lifestyle, but the character of Warwick as a suburb. So that's why it's important that we do act and we show that we are backing the community in every way we can. There have been some objections here from the administration. Firstly, as far as the ability to petition, I would say that it's consistent with the standing orders of the Legislative Assembly, because the local government is a corporation and it has the legal capacity of an actual person. Secondly, as far as a conflict of interest, we've also different opinions on the development application, so I don't believe it strictly is a conflict of interest. Privacy considerations, we could just request that if anyone takes a copy of the petition, that they sign a privacy statement that they will return it and not disclose the information for any improper purpose. As far as resourcing communications considerations, that's not going to be that significant. As far as any costs, and I think the big question is really what level of support are we going to give the community who is quite potentially affected by this decision? Are we serious that when we say that we want to do everything within our power, that this does not happen? Because, as I said, there is the clear power in the legislation for the government to cancel an approval if they are of the mind of that. So do we seriously have the opinion that we should do everything we can or not? I think we should. So in my opinion, that means we should request the Parliament to guarantee this doesn't go through. So then we can have a structure. We can then get together and we can put together a structure plan for the site and get a better development outcome. So I think that's important. And I think this is a step towards doing that. If we just request ourselves, then the issue that comes with that is they'll say, well, it's just the council. This is saying if we request that there should never be an approval given of this application, but at least this way we can say that we've got the community backing us. So that's why it's important. So I'll stop there.
Thank you, Councillor O'Neill. A seconder.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll keep it very, very brief. It is late in the night. This is just one other thing that we can be proactive on instead of reactive and, you know, looking at things later on. It does come down to a question of are we prepared to do whatever we can to show the community our support. And the community is the reason that we're here. I've received numerous emails in relation to petitions and all those sorts of things. I think this is a step forward. I come from a construction background, so I am aware that, when WAPC gets granted this, then they might be moving on this quicker than anyone believes. So I do think that we should be doing whatever we can now rather than waiting to be reactive now, later on. So I'll leave it at that, and I'll ask everyone to please support this notice of motion.
Thank you. I'm going to speak to this one very quickly. It's a bit unusual, but I'm going to jump in early. First of all, I have some concerns with this. It arrived in the agenda on Friday. That's the first I saw of it. So I hadn't been engaged on this, which I'll be honest, I find a little bit frustrating because it's an area where I do have considerable amount of experience and knowledge. And I understand that this is a point of particular concern in the community, and I would have liked to have been able to provide assistance, but it just arrived in the agenda. With respect, this is misguided in a range of different ways, and there are a lot of statements that have just been made that are just simply incorrect. First of all, a petition to the Parliament is not a petition to the Executive. It does not cross that threshold, not even close. Parliament's entirely separate to the Executive. Secondly, and I'll come to the privacy purpose in a second, if you are going to petition Parliament, right, the only thing you petition Parliament for is either Parliament grants supply to the government in terms of the budget, they scrutinise legislation, and then they scrutinise the actions of the Executive in terms of question time, but that's not binding. So if you're looking for Executive Council action, you're going to the wrong place. Even if you're seeking to use Parliament, whose procedures are pretty slow and they're about to be prorogued, you would never do a petition like this to the Legislative Assembly. You'd do it to the Legislative Council. The Legislative Council requires a petition to be referred to a committee. The Legislative Assembly does not, and it does not refer them to a committee. A Legislative Assembly petition is merely read into Hansard. That's it. It's read into Hansard, along with countless others. A Legislative Council petition is referred to a committee. A Legislative Council petition can be an e-petition, because that period is still open until the end of this month. Would have landed perfectly if you wanted to do an e-petition. Legislative Council takes e-petitions up to the end of this month. It hasn't cancelled out in August like the Legislative Assembly has. And finally, a Legislative Assembly petition, there is no privacy. It's read in, and the entirety, every name, every signature, goes to the clerk's office, and it's available for every member of Parliament to go and get a copy. Quite frankly, is a great way to get names, addresses, people who are interested in issues. There's no privacy in this. And it will have to be wet signatures. This is misguided. I'm sorry. I know it's well-intentioned. But I'm a bit frustrated that I don't know why there was no engagement. I wouldn't have minded engaging and giving some advice. But if this passes, there is only downside, because those downside risks that the officers have put out very well still remain. And there is just simply none of the upside risk that people are saying is there. Councillor Chester.
Yes, I have a question. Mr. Mayor, are you suggesting that if this goes to the lower house, the Assembly, that it will not necessarily go to the Executive Council? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's merely read into Hansard. That's all.
Then the whole thrust of the petition may, in fact, not get the effect that Councillor Kingston wants. All right, thank you.
Further comments? Councillor Pizzi?
Firstly, just a question. Councillor Kingston said that the developer would, within a week or so of getting approval, start building. Is that the opinion of the city, that that's how quick it would be, or would there be time after an approval, if that was to happen, to do something of this nature?
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I would think developments of this scale, even if the applicant's looking to bring through just the first stage, which was just two of the buildings, there is still a considerable amount of work that needs to go into drawings and planning for development between a planning approval and obtaining a building permit, and you need to obtain a building permit before you can start construction on site. So I do believe, while I can't put a particular figure on it, I do believe there would be some time between when a planning approval is granted and when
construction would actually commence on site. Without prejudice conditions of the officer recommendation from the item earlier tonight that councillors endorsed provides a validity period in the city's view that would require them to trigger the planning approval, which means commence development within 12 months. So it's at this stage, in the city's view, we would think the condition we're suggesting is development should occur within 12 months. It can happen earlier, but if the WAPC approve the application and approve it with our conditions, they would need to get a move on within 12 months.
So it's not your opinion that it will just be a week or so?
Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I would think a development of this scale, it would be more than a week or so. The developer may be undertaking work in parallel. I don't believe we've had any contact from them to indicate that they're moving forward with their building permit plans, but that doesn't mean they're not doing anything at the moment, but just not engaging with us.
Can I make a comment? Community member statements tonight discussed the mechanism of democratic process, and my sense is that it has also been bypassed with COVID as an excuse to push through planning developments, giving less input from community and local governments. I note this petition, like the Mayor have just said, is going through the House of Representatives. I think that the Legislative Council might have been a better choice to get the result that it's after. And I think it may be preemptive to do a petition for a decision that has not been made. I'm unsure whether to support this motion, as I have concerns that it could have the opposite effects to the petition's intention, and I'm very torn on this motion as I want to support the community's voice, and I feel like we have done that tonight with the motions that we've already moved. But I want to support their voices in a way that gets the intended best result, and I'm not convinced that this is what will.
Thank you.
I asked the question previously. I'd like to make a statement.
Yeah, I will go to Councillor Chester as well. Councillor, come back to you, Councillor
Chester. I'm conflicted for the reason that we have been ridden over, roughshod, to use an expression, by state government planning agencies, and they are currently disregarding basic democratic planning processes, in my opinion. So. And I want to point out that there's a lesson to be sent to state government ministers. I will reflect on the Minister for Planning, John Carey, who as recently as August this year said in a public forum that by allowing local planning to be left in the hands of local government would be a disaster. I mean, in my opinion, that's outrageous. But further to that, the Minister for Local Government, Hannah Beazley herself, most recently has said that councillors should keep, I want to get the quote right, I believe, and I'm just looking for the quote here, if you bear with me a second, should not interfere in local planning decisions. Now, yes, that's real. My position there is that we're elected to represent the residents and ratepayers of the city, and that includes reflecting their views on planning issues as well. So in this regard, I find her statement contrary to the Act at best, and at worst, frankly, very disrespectful to councillors, and I found it very offensive. The point I'm making here really is that if it was going to go to the Executive Council, which the Mayor suggested that it isn't anyway, but if it did, I mean, quite frankly, what chance would there be of getting a suitable outcome with two of those people on the Executive Council as Ministers of the Crown? So in that regard, I think the whole process would be useful. But on the other hand, I think we need to make a statement. And I would support this, if for no other reason to let the state government planning agencies know that we're not happy with the way planning processes have been going. And I don't think our position or the residents in the Warwick Quarter, I don't think it's not in my backyard mentality, nothing like it. I think it's a legitimate desire for local residents to return to what I call planning democracy. And I think we have to make a stand. So I'm conflicted because I've taken on board the Mayor's comment that it would be a waste of time, but I really want to let the state government know that we're not happy with the way things are going. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks to you, Mr. Mayor. So I note from the public gallery earlier there was a suggestion that this petition is opposed because of privacy reasons, and I hope that everybody who's read the notice of motion and the petition has appraised themselves of the officer's comments, because they've given five completely separate reasons why the view is that the notice of motion should not be supported. I note comments earlier about it's important that we show the community that we're doing all we can. I would suggest that there's a difference between doing all we can to positively affect outcomes and all we can to weaken our position with regard to seeking good outcomes on this issue. So I'm not conflicted. I have a very clear view based on the information presented before us that I do not support this notice of motion. That does not mean in any way that I'm not supportive of what the residents are doing, and I think that's clear from the earlier agenda item where I feel that the recommendation from the administration and the unanimous decision of council provided a very clear message to those residents that all of us are on their side on this matter, but we don't necessarily, sometimes when the community asks us to do things, it's not necessarily in the best interest of them and us to do precisely what they ask, and this is one of those occasions. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments, Councillor Hamilton Prime, and Councillor Hutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wasn't originally going to comment, but I think I've been inspired by some of the previous commenters about this. Just wanted to concur Councillor Hill's commentary. I think the unanimous decision tonight in the previous motion shows the will of the council in terms of supporting the residents and supporting good planning decisions. And I think as councillors, we want to do the best thing by the residents for the community. And I do not believe that will be this in this case, based on my personal opinion, but also the commentary from the mayor. We would not be doing them very good. We'll be doing them a disservice by giving them false hope that this would actually change dramatically what will happen. If anything, it may actually have adverse potential, and I would not want to support anything that can adversely reflect affect a decision that is so important, such as the Warwick Quarter development. In terms of local planning decisions and that whole process, the fact that people who are not duly elected by the community can make fundamental decisions on planning matters within a city jurisdiction that they have zero accountability to once the decision is made is horrible. And I think we've seen bad planning decisions that have been made because of it. We are, you know, elected by our community, represent our community, and we understand the issues and the complications within that community quite well. Not people who are appointed to unelected bodies. So we're backing the community, but I do not believe that backing this notice of motion, though it's honourable and, you know, admirable in terms of what it's trying to do, will not actually render the result that it seeks to have. So I cannot support it based on that.
Thank you, Councillor Hutton.
Sorry, I just have a governance question first. Are you able to foreshadow an alternative motion to a notice of motion? You're not, no? I would therefore like to suggest an amendment
Yes?
Yeah, so the amended motion would read, and I'm happy to take advice on this if it's not allowed, but supports making an e-petition under its common seal to the Legislative Council based on the preamble in Attachment 1. So that would be point 1. And then point 2 would be request the CEO to give public notice on the website and social media. So I'll read that again. It supports making an e-petition under its common seal to the Legislative Council based on the preamble in Attachment 1.
I'm just looking at the provisions. Before we go ahead too far.
And then it would strike out everything after media in the second point.
Can move the amendment, but I think it's a bit more complex than that to achieve what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, I'll move the amendment then. Based on comments already made.
Seconded Councillor Kingston. Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, so obviously based on comments made before, I think a lot of them early on in the evening agreed that we have to be doing as much as possible. Unfortunately, in this instance, the power to actually stop this decision, in my opinion, lies with the State Parliament. I think a petition is a good idea. I take on board the privacy concerns. Obviously, the e-petition would stop the privacy concerns. People put their own details in and no one else can see it. I interpret this wording to give enough flexibility to the administration, but also clarity on the intention. I think the preamble is quite clear. I put the amendment.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Although I have different thoughts about some of the criticisms of the original motion, I'm very happy to support this if this resolves the privacy considerations by having an e-petition. If it resolves the concerns which the Mayor has presented about it just being read into Hansard, then once again, this is an opportunity to resolve that, if that concern were to eventuate. It does resolve a number of the concerns which I think has been raised by other elected members about whether this would be an outcome which would be functional. I don't see it really as changing the intent of the motion at all, because the intent is probably best expressed in the preamble in the petition itself. So I don't see it as a significant change. I think it's a positive change which actually resolves many of the issues which the Mayor has spoken about, so I'd encourage everyone to support it. At least to amend the motion.
Thank you. Councillor Hill, Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks. So we had before us officers' comments in five different points relating to the original notice of motion. Can I therefore request the officers' comments, if any changes to those comments are applicable based on this new amendment? Thank you.
Director.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Mayor. I may begin and then also invite the Director of Governance and Strategy or the Manager of Governance to provide some more input as well. On the surface of things, and the one that I can probably speak to best is the item 2, which addresses the conflict of interest in the City's role regarding the development application process and risk to the City's reputation. I think that officer comment still stands, whether or not we're making petition to the Legislative Assembly or an e-petition to the Legislative Council. But as I said, I'll invite the Director of Governance and Strategy through you, Mayor, if there's any further comments that can be made in relation to the other four items raised in the officer comment.
Director Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It is quite a significant amendment. I don't know the standing orders for the Legislative Council and how a petition is to be presented, but I'm sure we could, if the Council were to adopt this, we would look at the way in which that could be done. With regard to privacy considerations, having an e-petition does absolve the City from those responsibilities and obligations and the resource requirements in relation to having to maintain the privacy of residents. So I guess it is advantageous for an e-petition rather than what was proposed previously with regard to a written one. And that is probably... I'll hold a second. Manager Governance probably has something else to say. Thank you.
Manager.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. So just having a look at the orders on the Parliament website, the provision to make an e-petition to the Legislative Council is open to the 31st of October. Part of that order is that a posted period for an e-petition is to be a minimum of 1 week. So if this were to be passed by council, we would have to post that tomorrow to meet that 1 week requirement.
Thank you. Councillor.
Sorry, may I continue?
Deputy Mayor.
Yes, thanks. So just in response to that, I just highlight then that the point two of the officer's comment, conflict of interest in the City's role regarding the development application process and risk to the City's reputation, still stands. On that basis, I cannot support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston?
It's just a question about the last piece of governance advice. It said that it has to be posted for at least a week. So just clarifying, posted where and what do you mean?
So the provision reads, the posted period for an e-petition is to be a minimum of 1 week. And noting that the provision to be able to do an e-petition to the Legislative Council finishes on the 31st of October.
Mm-hmm. Just following up on a question with that, if the Council passed this motion and to have an e-petition, could we request, though, that is that just for it to be posted on the website and then post that 1 week? Could it still be up for longer than that?
Manager?
Is that just because there's 1 week left of that period to post it, but can it then be posted on the website then for a month or so?
Manager?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I don't believe so on my reading of the orders. I think if you were to post an e-petition tomorrow, it would have to close on the 31st of October.
Thank you. Councillor Vinjoy.
Thank you. Through you, listening to all the feedback from my colleagues, I go back to the original position of the City, and I still concur with their position. What I believe here, though, is I don't believe the petition is actually the right tool. I don't see this as the right tool. I don't believe it's going to achieve the correct outcome. I believe that we have more control when we use our own channels, whether it be through our social media tools, internal surveys. There's so much more we can do. And the reach and the data analytics that come from that, the public feedback that comes to that through those channels, that sends a much clearer message publicly and achieves much better outcomes for the City than a petition that we send off. I just don't think it's going to achieve the desired outcomes that we anticipate. The City's position could be clear, and we can control the content by using our own channels and the data and the analytics that we get and the public feedback and sentiment we get from that will be way more impactful. And that is probably the way I would probably look at anything that we would do moving forward outside of what we've already agreed upon this evening.
Thank you. Question? Question on the amendment, Deputy Mayor?
Yeah, it's just in response to a comment from the Manager of Governance about having to post it tomorrow. Does she actually mean today? Because we're now into Wednesday. Thank you. I'd like clarification on that.
Manager?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, that would be correct.
On that note, I move that the amendment be put. Do I have a seconder? Seconded, Deputy Mayor. Those in favour, by show of hands. Those against, two against, Councillor Kingston, Councillor Raftus. Councillor Hutton, you have a chance to close, and then we put the amendment. Do you wish to close?
I wasn't the proposer of the original motion. It was Councillor Kingston, so is it Councillor Kingston?
I've just put the amendment.
Oh, so it's now my motion?
No, I've just put the amendment to go to a vote.
Oh, sorry, apologies, sorry, I was confused, my bad. Yes, so obviously there's a lot of issues with no matter what petition form we go through. I understand it potentially is going to be quite a rush to get it out. I think in a one-week period we can hopefully get a lot of signatures. I think there is a lot of downside to having the paper form, and unfortunately time is of the essence, so I guess this is, in my opinion, the lesser of all the evils, but the most important thing is we're doing what we can in the time that we have, which is unfortunately very limited. So I think this is an improvement on the original motion.
Thank you. I'll put the amendment and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed. And the amendment is carried. It now forms the primary motion, and we return to debate on the motion as amended. Council. Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Support this. I think look, this is an important matter. We've got a state government authority put in place by a government that had no opposition. The intent of it was originally to provide some boost for the economy during COVID. It wasn't even necessary given what the boom that was happening in building during that process. And then when we got to the end of the COVID, this panel was made into a permanent arrangement. So completely unnecessary. It's taking away ability for local governments to represent their constituents. And I think given the sheer size and scale of this proposed development, with we're talking about numbers in excess of 60% of the existing residences within Warwick, we need to be demonstrating that we are doing everything possible to negate this potential approval of this development. I think we need to be getting out there and putting... I don't care if the... they ignore it, but we need to demonstrate that we're doing everything we can. And to say, oh, no, on a technicality matter, we just shouldn't bother, you know, it's just not going to cut it. I think we need to take a step, plough it in and get it done and lodge it into Parliament, the Legislative Council, to at least have it on the record how strongly we and our community feel about this. Thank you.
Thank you for the comments. Councillor Kingston, do you wish to close?
Yes, I will. Thank you. I think the important way to look at this, at least in my mind, and it goes to Councillor Venciullo's comments on the amendment, is that is this the right tool? Is this the right mechanism? And the reason why I say yes is that this isn't just a marketing exercise. This isn't something that we can just solve by putting out some clever messaging or messaging over time. Is that at the end of the day, this issue is resolved by the exercise of power. That's how this one way or another is going to be resolved. The Planning Commission is either going to decide, yes, they will give the approval, or no, they won't. In the event that an approval is given, who then has the power to overturn that approval? And there's only one body currently under the legislation that's able to do that. That's the Executive Council. the Executive Council is comprised of members of Parliament, it's the ministers, and it's the Premier. So they sit in the Parliament, so how is the best way to try and approach them formally and say, this is what we think should happen, and to show that we're supported by our residents in that request? To me, the most formal way of doing that, the most appropriate way of doing that, is a petition. To me, that is fundamentally what a petition's for. It's about asking somebody who has power to exercise it. And that's, to me, where this will end one way or another. Somebody will exercise power to resolve this one way or another. If we're not on top of this and we don't do everything we can for our residents, it might not turn out the way that we want. And so I think we should stick by the comments that the ward councillors have said, Councillor Chester, Councillor O'Neill, and then also the comments from Councillor Raftus. I think we should do everything that's in our power to request those people that have the power to give certainty to the community. And that's by saying if an approval is given, it should be cancelled until there's a structure plan. I don't think that's unreasonable. I think that's a sensible thing to petition the Parliament for. And lastly, on Councillor Pizzi's point of view, where is this something that needs to be done fairly soon afterwards, I would say yes, it does. There were questions about practical commencement of at least the construction works, but that doesn't mean that immediately after a development approval is given that there is not finance agreements that are entered to or other development agreements that are not necessarily directly the commencement of the work but have significant financial implications. So to me, we need to ask the people who have the power to exercise that power. I don't think we should expect the power to be idle. So I'd ask everyone to support this.
Thank you. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed and the motion is carried. Notice of motion number 2, Councillor Kingston.
I'll move the motion as written. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I have a seconder? Seconded, Councillor O'Neill. Councillor Kingston.
I'll keep this very brief and I'll just speak to the comments which have come from the Australian Human Rights Commission. The Australian Human Rights Commission put in a submission on this bill that's currently before the Federal Parliament. It's expected that this bill will pass in, or at least that's what's being discussed, in the next couple of months. The bill itself, the way it is being characterised by the Australian Human Rights Commission, may likely censor speech that relates to a number of matters which concern the local government. We often discuss here significant planning matters, significant development applications, and under the analysis which has been performed by the Australian Human Rights Commission, that discussion on economic matters to do with large corporations can be maybe likely censored under the new legislation that's being considered. There was a short public consultation period, and during that public consultation period, it was about 7 days initially, and then it was extended because there was a lot of concern why a significant bill that affects freedom of expression across the whole country had such a short public consultation period. So given all those elements and the risk that it has on expression of freedom of expression in the district, I think it's suitable that we write to the relevant federal minister saying that we don't believe the bill should be passed in its current form. I would like to thank the CEO for his comments, which has been attached to the end of the bill, and I think it's actually touched on a point which I didn't expect, so at least in the officer's comments, sorry. And it said that to the cities, no local government representative body, whether WALGA or ALGA, has developed any discussion papers or advocacy positions in relation to this bill. So it appears that the local government sector as a whole has not been adequately consulted, or at least the member local governments of it have not been consulted. So that's detailed on page 15 relating to the officer's comment. So given that's the case, I think it is appropriate to write to the minister and say, well, since local government as a whole has not been able to form an opinion on the legislation, and since an opinion hasn't been formed and there hasn't been that complete consultation with the sector, and given that the bill will affect speech in the sector and everything we do as an elected body is undergirded by democratic functions. And democratic functions rely on freedom of expression and freedom of speech. So I'd encourage everyone to support this motion to say we should write to the minister that this bill shouldn't pass in its current form, and the criticisms of this bill and the concerns which have been raised have not been raised by fringe groups. It's been raised, as I said, by, and it's in the motion, raised by the Victorian Bar Association, which is the Association of Barristers in Victoria, and also by the Australian Human Rights Commission. So, and as a sector, the local government sector has not been engaged adequately. So I think it's reasonable to say we have concerns and the government should hold off. Otherwise, a bill like this might pass and then we find that speech is censored or speech is then limited, or people, just because the chilling effect on speech, may not communicate within the district on local government matters as openly as maybe they should or be able to. So I'd encourage everyone to support it.
Thank you. Councillor O'Neill, I think.
Reserve my right.
Thank you. Comments, Councillor Pizzi?
I strongly disagree with the MAD bill and have put my own personal submission in. I think we are on a very shaky tightrope, and our very democratic society and freedom of speech is close to being eradicated with this MAD bill, and I think we need to take a step back and trust that the Australians can discern for themselves what is and is not misinformation and disinformation. Furthermore, the MAD bill will affect local governments who, unlike state and federal governments, have parliamentary privilege. So I'll be supporting Daniel Kingston's motion.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Look, this is freedom of speech and having certain parties rule what is misinformation and disinformation. I think we are rolling down a very bad path. We saw the arguments during COVID as to what was regarded as disinformation or misinformation, and amazingly how much of that information was then correct following COVID. So I have great concerns about any sort of government, and particularly with one that's rushed and not consulted properly in this matter. And it has been pointed out there's been no consultation with local governments, no engagement, no representative parties being able to put in the references from the attachments regarding there only being a 7-day opening for comments. Very limited. So if you're trying to protect freedom of speech, why would you limit it in terms of gathering information and feedback? I think this is a key part of representing our constituents and looking after them in a key matter. So I'd ask that everyone support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Councillor Kingston, you wish to close?
Just briefly to say, everything we do here as elected members is undergirded by a democratic function, and that is principally the ability of people to be able to say what they think about elected members, say what they think about government policy, and discuss things that occur in the country. Not just government policy, but also economic actions. And this bill, as has been described by the Human Rights Commission, may even go as far to actually prevent or limit, in this case they say, prevent or limit discussion even on things as legitimate discussion on interest rates. So if we think about the discussions that happen every month where people talk about...
Councillor, I think that's new material.
You're right.
Thank you.
Or an argument. So I just encourage everyone to support it. I think we need to be concerned when governments suggest things that might limit freedom of expression, so I'd encourage everyone to support the motion. It's late.
Thank you. I'll put that motion and ask you to cast your votes. Declare the voting closed, and the motion is carried. Thank you. Next item of business is announcements of notice of motion for the next meeting, councillors. If not, then I declare the council meeting closed at 12:23 a.m. Thank you all.